You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network, so please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. That is super important. Like us on Facebook. Share this episode with friends and support us through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you, so $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. And we are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. Thank you to Casey Show for becoming a contributor today. We got several people have joined, and I'm going to get a list and thank you guys on the show real soon. I always remember that right as I read that line, and I never prepare. But just know that I see it when you guys join, and I'm very thankful, and we will be very soon, as of I've been saying this for a year, Greg, we will be thanking you properly for all your contributions.
We will. We promise.
Yes. This is Greg Lenz, my valiant co-host here to get ratchet with the rest of us.
This is going to be the most interesting podcast we've ever done. We have quite the eclectic cast.
We have a dream team of Skid Row, of ratchetness, that we're going to introduce here in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsor. We are taking sponsors now, and I just want to say thank you to everybody. We've ended the run with our sponsor, Zach Haval with Liberty Valiance, the podcast. You guys downloaded, and I'm sure you guys downloaded in mass droves because he's very happy. 812 Farms couldn't be happier about being a sponsor of this program. You guys have gone above and beyond. Like I said in the last episode, I couldn't imagine anybody would actually go and talk to a hop farm in Columbus, Indiana. But you guys have bought home hops. Home brewers have been buying hops like crazy from 812 Farms in Columbus, Indiana, and liking their Facebook page.
Hopefully ordering permafrost at the tap down on Mass Ave.
Yep. So thank you guys so much for supporting our advertiser. They supply home brewers and commercial breweries with locally grown hops, and they're in the process of starting a destination brewery down there in Bartholomew County. They're using all Indiana-grown ingredients, and they want to build a brew pub that honors the farmers of Indiana. And they're going to build a wedding barn, an event center, a restaurant, a brewery, an indoor hydroponics vegetable garden, and overnight lodging over the course of the next few years. So they're doing big things down there in Columbus, Indiana, and right now they're doing hop sales and beer infusion events with bars. So if you own a bar, then please hit them up. If you're a patron to a bar here in central Indiana, please get with your favorite bar and get with 812 Farms. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for supporting them, and we thank you for everything that you guys do to support us. You guys are just so great to us and so generous. One of our favorite donors invited herself down. Come on over, Christy.
Come on over.
One of our favorite donors and contributors to We Are Libertarians, Christy Avery. You are on one of these mics here. Keep talking.
Hello?
No, you're not on. Go ahead.
Turn me on, Chris.
Yeah, I'm trying. Christy Avery drove down special from Fort Wayne, a two-hour drive after her doctor's visits all day, to come and see us.
I know. What's up with that? I did have a driver, so I didn't have to actually drive.
Good old Phil, who also wasn't invited.
He was kind of like not invited.
He was specifically told he was not allowed to come, was he not?
I don't know what you're talking about, Chris.
Yeah, it's fine. Phil's a good guy. Phil's your live-in house boy, right?
Yep.
He cleans your pool.
My pool boy.
Takes care of all your needs.
He's your intern ed.
You're actually a little mad at me, aren't you?
Why am I mad at you?
Over the last episode.
Oh, are you going to bring that up again?
In
case anybody missed it.
Listen, you're a little mad at me, and I understand because I spilled the beans that you got nude at the last party and skinny dipped a little bit.
And I'm sure there's no pictures of it anywhere.
No,
there are no photos.
No, that is 100%. If you get nude anywhere around us, we take pictures all the time of everything, but that is one thing that we...
Some things are sacred.
Some things are sacred. There are no pictures of James Neese's dick. Not for that party, anyways.
It's burned in my mind, though.
I know. Mine, too. Well, James is here. We'll talk to him in just a moment. But I want to apologize. I didn't mean to spill the beans. But listen, you come to a We Are Libertarians party, it's content, okay? I want everybody who's listening.
I'll remember that in the future.
If you come to a party, you're there to be talked about on the podcast.
It's not Vegas. This is not Vegas. It doesn't stay there.
No. What happens at a We Are Libertarians party, we're going to talk about on the air. And so don't come begging to me for silence, because it's not going to happen. There are several people who are just no longer a part of our friend circle as a result of that party, Aaron. So I went there. Listen, so it's just, you know.
I was just surprised that it didn't come up on the Tad Western podcast.
Well, Tad Western is a great American.
He is very great.
So thank you so much for coming down, Christy.
Thank you for letting me in.
All right. And she means sexually. we have, it's 420. We're recording this podcast on 420. It is going to be quite the ratchet show. And for those of you new to the podcast, let me just explain what happens here. For the first 20 to 30 minutes, we just talk amongst ourselves about what's going on. It's
sort of get into things.
Just
know,
get into
up.
The conversational mode a little bit.
And yeah.
We talk about what's going on in the We Are Libertarians universe. So it's a little inside baseball, and a lot of you go, I don't understand what the fuck you people are talking about. So, you know, if you're just a nerd, if you're a real autist who only is coming to us for information.
Or a first-time listener.
First-time listener, thank you for listening.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
We couldn't be happier that you chose to spend a couple hours on us.
You will eventually understand what we're talking about in those first 20 minutes. We promise. You just got to give us a few episodes and stick with it, because we got a large circle of friends that all hang out here in central Indiana. But we generally jump into the information and go real hard on all the data after about 20 minutes.
We review
minutes.
All the documents.
Right. This episode will probably be about 40 minutes, because we have an all-star lineup of the dregs of society.
We have the elite of the elite podotarians in central Indiana.
So most libertarians are shy about the libertarian meme that we're Republicans that love to smoke pot. Obviously, we're not Republicans, but many libertarians love to smoke pot. You and I are not one of them.
We are the rarest of rare. We really are the most boring of lifestyles. We couldn't be more traditional, and yet we're full blown. Do whatever you want, as long as it doesn't bug
me. Absolutely. I am fascinated by ratchet people, and I love talking to them, and I love being friends with the outcasts of society, because I too am an outcast of society. Our listeners are outcasts to society. And you have a home here with us. If you feel like you fit in nowhere, We Are Libertarians is your home.
We are unlicensed nonconformists, sort of our own little island of misfit toys.
The Libertarian Party hates us. The Republican Party hates
us. We are the Libertarians your party warned you about.
Yes. So, Miranda is going to join us at some point. Miranda, host of Miranda's World, our favorite stripper. One of the biggest potheads I know. She was supposed to show up at 4 o'clock today, and do an episode of Miranda's World. And then she texted me at 4:45 and said, "I just woke up." And so I said, "Are you going to be able to make it by 6 o'clock to do a We Are Libertarians?" She's like, "No, unless I can get money from this guy." So she's downtown somewhere. And let me see if I can pull
up. It's all very legal.
It's very legal. Yeah, she's not strong.
It's on the up and up.
Yeah. So,
voluntary exchange.
Oh, we have text messages from Miranda. I am not going to make it, but I really do need to. She's not going to make it now. Miranda posted about one of her clients. Sir, if I do not this is on her public Facebook profile.
Oh, I did see that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sir, if I do not hear from you soon, I am going to straight act a motherfucking fool on your ass. I am not fucking playing. I am literally getting ready to escalate shit real quick, real fucking quick. So, Miranda is
boy, am I glad I'm not that guy.
Yeah, trust me.
Her next step's to call his work.
Absolutely. So she's really something. Love her to pieces. Listen to Miranda's World. She is a great American. Also on the podcast,
the legend.
The well, we've got two legends.
We do.
We
one is well known to the We Are Libertarians.
Let's start with him. It is the man who whipped out his wiener at the last party, who jumped in the pool. Now we have seen each other's dick. I'm closer to James than
anyone in the Libertarian Party.
Anybody. James and I have seen each other's dick. It was not gay. No homo, right, James? You're going to have to talk into that mic, buddy.
Oh, hey, there's nothing wrong with a little dick scoping. It's what men do. Locker room,
right.
You think you said one time in a locker room you saw some dude that had like some dangly ass balls. I'm talking.
I had switched to the Y for a brief period of time, and now back at LA Fitness. The LA Fitness, everybody gets in, they put their stuff in there, and then they go get swole. The Y, men of a certain age, meaning over 75, like to go in there and just really let everything hang out. And I saw this 80-year-old man one time with the biggest fucking hog I had ever seen in my life. I mean, this dude's balls and dick. I he wasn't black either, but he was like Mandingo. It was really, he was not a grower. He was a shower. It was something else. And James, you do not have that problem. I mean, I'm guessing you're a grower, but you're definitely not much of a shower, to be honest.
Oh, not really. No, I guess I'm sitting there, I jump in, I'm like, oh man, everybody's seen my dick, and I was like, should I just like go in there and masturbate real quick to come back out? I'm like, no, dude, it's really like this. Like, it's really,
that
really
water
like
was 54 degrees.
54, it's like
Mandingo
a square.
Mandingo would have been an acorn.
Honestly, yeah, what were you on that night?
I was on like a bottle of Delsim, so like.
What is that?
Robitussin. It's the elite of the cough suppressants.
A couple things to lean. The special lean, not the normal codeine lean. It's the DXM lean.
Now, the other voice that you're hearing is that of Tanner Perdue.
The legend.
Tanner, how are you doing?
The myth. I'm great.
It took a lot to get Tanner here.
It isn't easy. He's an in-demand guy. You know, Tanner has quite a few people that have put demands on his time lately, so I'm just glad he can make it.
Yeah. I mean, I try to make time for everything. But, I mean, I would much rather be here than most places right now in Newcastle. In particular, somewhere on Jeffrey Street recording a podcast. I would much rather do it here. I'm just kidding, Jeremiah.
We'll explain that in a moment. You said, you got to do this, send me a message, bro, and I'll be there. That is not the case, because
that is the case.
You have been invited three times now. You've finally shown up. And, Greg, can you explain the process of getting Miranda and Tanner here for this episode?
Well, Miranda, it's kind of futile, because she really she's like an apparition. She just appears when she appears, and she's gone when she's gone.
Right.
And there's no, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Tanner, we originally, you were supposed to be our official correspondent for the inauguration.
Yeah.
And you made it to about the Ohio border and got yourself a big cup of coffee, and then you had a little bit of a technical glitch that transpired on your way to the inauguration.
Well, my phone was already like sort of messing up before, but it still worked, and it was in like I was driving and it was in between my legs, and there was a cup of coffee on top of it, and it like slid off into the floorboard without me noticing. And I ended up setting the coffee cup down there, and it just soaked it. So
you had no vowels, but you had just enough ability to go on Facebook and make a public post that said, phone is F-C-K-D.
Yeah, I was at a McDonald's in West Virginia.
Which is honestly the most We Are Libertarians thing that could have happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so I'm at this McDonald's in West Virginia, and the phone won't charge at all, it'll come on sometimes, but it's just like flashing.
And that's always good.
I can't really hit anything. So like, I'd probably tried it 300 times to enter my passcode to get into the phone, and I finally got in. And then when I went to make a status and like tell you guys that I wasn't gonna be able to do anything.
It ran into some technical issues.
Not a text message or a direct message, a status on Facebook that I just happened to stumble upon.
That's the best part, is it was just randomly we stumbled upon, oh, Tanner's having phone issues because he just wrote no vowels, an alert message, like an SOS.
Yeah, if I would have tried to go to a direct message, it would not have worked. Because I popped open the status and I started hitting buttons, and as soon as I pushed one, like the whole keyboard started just firing letters into the thing. So I kept having to backspace, and it took probably about 25 minutes to make that four-letter post.
Well, we appreciate the effort you went to let us know, because we were afraid you died.
I would have rather died. See, that was a terrible experience.
Here's the thing, and you felt really bad, which I felt bad about, because to be honest, like I never promote anything. Because we are libertarians, part of our charm is that we're bad at follow through. We are not professional like Lions of Liberty or the production values of Johnny Rocket Launchpad. They're amazing. We're not Tom Woods with a fancy curriculum and daily episodes. We're not even Roger Paxton.
We're somewhere between Joe Rogan and Tom Woods.
Joe has his shit together. We are really we're somewhere between Barstool Sports and the podcast that you started in college for five episodes.
We're an organic bottom up podcast,
right? You know,
free range.
Somewhere between foreign and domestic, which last four episodes.
Please don't ever compare us to that.
Rest in peace. We'll get to that in a moment. So I never really prepare anytime I've ever promoted anything. That has about to happen. For instance, our membership tier, which I've been working on for a year, and by working on, I haven't done anything. Meanwhile, I've given the idea to people like Lions of Liberty, and they're making millions of dollars off of that. It doesn't follow through. So I knew I was taking a risk with young Tanner. You know, you can hear Tanner.
I'm so sorry. I mean, I really did feel bad about it.
When you hear Tanner's voice, you hear a responsible adult, right, Greg?
He is. He's a responsible adult.
He's a salesman, top salesman.
Manager.
Yes.
Manager at where?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Don't
listen
to the employer.
But I am the only employee right now, so.
All right.
That technically would make you the manager.
Yeah. You're the assistant to the manager.
Last man standing.
I'm basically the CEO, I guess.
He's a phone salesman. How would you describe it, James? Don't say the name, but how would you describe the phone company that he works for?
Oh, God.
Sweet, sweet deals for melanin-enhanced individuals.
Right. It's a no-contract deal, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No contract.
So if you're in Newcastle and you need a phone, Tanner can hook you up. So I knew I was... But he's a responsible person, and I figured if I give him the job of going to Washington, D.C. to cover the inauguration for us, we're going to get great content.
Oh, yeah.
People are going to love it.
It would have been, too. Trust me.
People would fall in love with Tanner. And weed is legal there now, right?
In the district.
Well... It's kind of complicated. You have to have a delivery service deliver it to you. You can't buy it in dispensaries.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So
it's a jobs program.
Got it.
So to get pot there legally, you have to get it delivered.
Okay, so...
You can't just walk into a store, like, for instance, that sells no-contract cell phones.
Right.
Right. You cannot walk into Cricket Weed and get some weed.
I feel like there's some crossover that could work out well based on clientele.
I mean, our color is green.
Yeah.
There you go.
It might work.
Tanner didn't let us down. He actually gave me exactly what I was looking for, which was a complete and abject failure.
The story of collapse is way funnier than if you had gone and done like just an exceptional job.
But it was unreal. If I could have done it, and like if I could go back in time and do it again, I would have to be paid $50,000 at least. It was such a terrible time.
Well, again, we don't have Jason Stapleton money, okay? You got paid exactly what we
have. I mean,
in names.
Unless, hold on. Hey, Christy, can we borrow 50 grand? No, she said no.
Well, I mean, it was just a disaster from beginning to end. We left, and then about an hour and a half into the trip, my phone broke. And then, we probably had 8 hours to go, and I didn't have a phone. I didn't have a way to tell you guys that I wasn't going to be able to do anything. No, I was in that Mustang.
Are you serious?
The one that just died.
Who were you with?
I was with one of my buddies.
Just the two of you went to the inauguration on a road trip?
It was a one-day thing. He just hit me up one day.
Said, hey, let's go to Trump's inauguration?
The day before. He was like, do you want to go to the inauguration? And then I was kind of I would, but...
And then he's weed's legal there. If weed's legal there, and Tanner goes, ha, far out, bruh.
No, I posted about it, and I was like, I said something along the lines of, years ago, you would never, I would never believe that I would be rolling up to a Trump inauguration. Right. And you commented on it, and you told me to message you, and you asked if I wanted to do some reporting.
Well, so when I see talent, I see talent in you, Tanner.
Yeah, I'm definitely probably the best, special.
Correspondent.
Yeah, correspondent, special reports. I'm the guy you're looking for.
I agree.
If I can get a reliable phone there.
Yeah. Well, now you can because
you got a whole store full.
You can get 10 lines for $100.
Yeah. Well, 5.
Yeah. Still. 5. So Tanner joins us. But the funny thing about Tanner is Tanner doesn't actually smoke weed, right?
Correct.
Yeah. He's clean.
He does not smoke weed. Have you ever smoked weed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But he doesn't smoke weed anymore. But at the party, you were violently attacked.
Oh. I kind of have a little bit of PTSD from that.
Well, what happened?
Just because... Why would you do that to someone?
What happened?
I'm a human being.
The best way to heal from PTSD is to open up about your struggles. What happened
at
the party 2 weeks ago?
So, I was just out there minding my own business, and I saw everyone, including Jeremiah, with cigars.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Jeremiah didn't have a cigar. we're sitting out there, and...
You just shook his head violently, yes.
And I'm just chilling, and somebody pulls out I thought it was a cigar. And I was just smoking a cigarette. I had a few drinks, and my flame went out on my lighter, so I had to use their cigarette.
The cigarillo, the cigarillo.
Yeah, they needed the lit cherry to light your own.
And the cherry on the cigarillo was going out, so I started puffing on it, and I immediately was like, there's something wrong with this tobacco. So I got the flame working and lit my cigarette, and about that time, just my head started spinning, and I just didn't know where I was at, and I got poisoned.
You were a victim.
How else did you feel?
I mean, I had to go to the hospital.
Really?
Yeah, I mean... I was poisoned.
Now you have beautiful eyes, Tanner.
Thank you.
You have great eyes. You. They're blue and black. The pupils are a little dilated right now, but I'm just guessing it's because it's bright in here, right?
Right. I would assume so.
But you look at the white in those eyes.
Very white, very clear. I mean, he could be a Visine spokesperson.
How did they look at the party?
It looked like someone had farted on his pillow and he had pink eye.
What about before?
Well, you were fine. You were clear-eyed. Yeah. You were showing me your video of your accident, and then I see you.
That doesn't exist, by the way.
Okay. Anyway, I see you probably 3 hours later. Everybody's, it's probably midnight or so, and everybody's standing around in Jeremiah Morrill's kitchen. And out of nowhere, I just catch a glimpse of you, and you're talking, I think, to Rachel Valor and Francis, Jeremiah's cousin. and I see your eyes, and it looked like a bee had stung you on both eyes because you were completely puffed up, pink. You couldn't really open them, but yet you were still functional and talking to people. And so I
Not really.
He was in pain.
Yeah, yeah. He'd been poisoned.
I could see pain.
I was in fear of my life.
So I see Tanner, and I just goes, Tanner, did they give you some of that wacky tobacco? And I was so impressed because on cue, you go, they did, and I'm not happy about it. But I'm so glad that you made it through your poison, you know.
Yeah, it was rough. I induced vomiting, you know.
How did you get home that night?
My dad picked me up.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
No kidding. So he trusted you to be at Jeremiah Mortal's house.
Which for some reason he did.
Is honestly a bad influence, is he not?
Lion Jer,
yeah. I mean, his parties are pretty wild.
Something has happened to him. Now, it's on record, it's state law, that one time during a hearing, there were fines. Jeremiah had a fine in 2010. James Neese had a fine when he ran for office in 2010, and they went to appeal it. And James, you said what to the and you could look this up. It's all documented. You said what to the election commission?
I said, because like what they do is like, your first time offense, they usually waive it.
Right.
And I was like, Jeremiah went first. And I said in like clear as day English, just like Jeremiah, we forgot to file on time. We were 4 or 5 days late, you know. So, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to pay like the $20 fine, or how are you going to go about it? And they're like, okay, we'll waive it. And then a week later, they post the results on the website for like, oh, it's because it's a legitimate trial. I mean, it's not like a judge or a jury or anything, but it's legitimate. They stamp it, goes to the Secretary of State's office.
It's the election commission. It's the same ones that allowed Todd Young to run as a Republican, even though 500 people wouldn't sign a pledge for him in Lake County.
Yeah, so the typist typed it out, like, she was probably on wacky tobacco, because when I said, just like Jeremiah, they wrote, just like my dad, Jeremiah. So therefore, it's stamped, sealed in the Secretary of State's office that Jeremiah is now legally my father.
And honestly, it was laughable at the time, but Jeremiah is the Boss Hog of Liberty. You can get close to Jeremiah by listening to the Boss Hog of Liberty, looking it up in iTunes. And something's happened to the boy. He's not okay, is he, Tanner?
Well,
you're worried about him, aren't you?
No, I think it's awesome. I think he's really coming out of his shell, you know. We need to get him a white suit with a black tie and like a little hat. And like he can walk around with one of those canes that's also a shotgun and just drink beer and stuff.
You were supposed to be on his podcast last night. What happened to you?
Well, oh, God. Jesse comes into the store
Jesse Riddle.
He's got my vote for state chair.
Really?
But, yep.
That's cancer, bro. He looks like Jason Sipe. Are you going to vote for Jason Sipe?
I would. So Jesse Riddle comes into your store. And when Jesse comes into your store, you've got to be quaking in fear, because there goes your whole afternoon, because he's just going to ask a million autistic questions, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, the bad thing about it was he texted me about 3 hours before I went into work.
So you lived in fear.
Like 10. Exactly. And he was like, I'll be in at like 5:20. So I'm sitting there all day with no customers in there, like, when is Jesse going to be here so I can get this over with? And then Jesse comes in at like 6:30, an hour later, so, and he like hands me this weird phone. Like, he gets it out of a case and then hands it to me, and it feels like there's cement or something on the back of his phone. And I was like, are you sure this is going to port over? And he was like, yeah, it will. And so I go to take his SIM card out, and it's this crazy thing that I've never seen before. The tray popped out, except the SIM card was like face down instead of face up. It's unlike any other phone I've seen.
Right.
So he ordered it directly from China.
He had to have. I've never seen
anything. You can't get
like
his phones here.
Because here's the thing about IT guys. It doesn't matter if it's popular. And James, you work in IT. You can attest to this. IT guys, they love to be different. You can say, it doesn't matter that the iPhone has sold more phones than any other phone ever and revolutionized the entire industry. It sucks. You need to get a phone from China. This is so much better. Like, they always try to one-up you with their technology.
We have a hidden club called like the weird shit you find on the internet that makes you better than everybody else club.
Right.
So we have a Reddit about it, and we're like, dude, like, you know, that's how I found that browser. I was showing you guys the VR browser.
Right.
And it's just like, we'll find something, and it's so obscure, and then we fucking push it. We're just like, look at this shit. Look at this. Just look at it. And, you know, then people are like, this is retarded, dude.
Right.
And, like, it doesn't matter what you think. One thing that matters is, like, I'm trailblazing. If I'm trailblazing, then I'm on par.
Right.
So, you know, like, for phones, like, he probably got it from China. He might even got it from Taiwan.
Well, the thing is, it went through, and I got his phone number over to Cricket Network. And he was like, so when's this going to transfer over and stuff? And I was like, I don't know. It normally takes about a half an hour. So he goes and eats at Los Amigos, which is just a Mexican restaurant.
Right. We didn't assume it was Italian, Tanner.
Well, it's in Newcastle, so it's like right down the road. And I was supposed to close at 8. And Jesse's like, I'll be back in if it doesn't work. And I try calling him at like 7, and I knew that it didn't work. I was just like, oh my God, Jesse's going to come back. So
fear in his
eyes. It hits about 7:55, and I'm outside just like getting ready to close up, you know. And here comes Jesse, Jeremiah, and Dakota.
The whole cast of the Boss Hog of Liberty shows up. Jeremiah Morrill and Dakota Davis, your son.
Yeah.
My son and your brother.
Yeah. My stepbrother?
No, your half-brother.
Oh, yeah. Half-brother.
Greg,
okay.
Greg doesn't have sex with the same woman twice.
Unless I investigate her.
Right.
But, see, where are we at again?
And so the three amigos walk into...
They come into Cricket. Yeah. And,
they invade your establishment.
Right.
I'm like,
as you're ready to close, which you know, if you've been sitting in a room by yourself all day long, when it's closing time, you want to get the fuck out of there. You don't want to be dealing with
Jesse Riddle.
The thing is, I had no idea what could have been wrong with his phone. So I go online and I fix it, and I'm starting to take the phones off of the little tags. And it's just like, we're making small talk, and Dakota's taking pictures of me and stuff. It
right,
was,
like
it was
you're
pretty
some sort
funny.
Of circus freak, right? It's insulting.
No, not at all.
Right.
I mean, I thought it was funny.
Right.
Because
Dakota's very funny.
Dakota's had some strawberry margs, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He was a little bit tipsy.
I asked how the experience was, and Tanner earlier described it as, you know, when you're making small talk with your family at Thanksgiving and you just want to leave. That's sort of how it was.
It wasn't like that.
It was with his family. It just wasn't Thanksgiving.
It was like whenever they say, look how much taller you've gotten every time they see you.
Right.
You know
you're 27.
What I mean? And it's just obvious that they don't have anything else to say, so they just say that you've been getting taller. But
that's
I mean,
what happens.
I would rather see them there than anybody else, I guess.
Sure, right.
So it was a
Even
lot of fun,
Jesse
really.
Riddle.
But I did change... the picture on the phones to where when a customer looks at them, they get a picture of me, a selfie on the front of every phone. So
I did see that, and that was funny.
Yeah. And the other day I went over there to sell someone a phone, and I turned on the display, and Pornhub was up. So somebody thought it would be funny to go over
Jared.
And put... Pornhub. No.
Are you kidding?
It couldn't have been Jer.
No, I don't know. He's in Vegas. He's leaving his girlfriend in the car while he's going and gambling on WCW or whatever. What is it? MMA?
UFC.
I think it was UFC and NCAA basketball.
Jer has turned over a new leaf, and not for the better. He's, Next stop is he's doing Desitin in the front of the
Delsim
in the
robo tripping with knees and jumping off of balcony or jumping off of roofs.
Desitin is like a rash cream for old people and babies.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you could probably get high off it, but no, I think Jeremiah has emerged from the little libertarian caterpillar he was into full-blown corrupt park superintendent that he always wanted to
be. A coquette butterfly?
Yeah.
I think that whole ordeal that happened in Newcastle with the
I bet
lake,
he's killed people.
The
I
lake
guarantee
at,
it.
Memorial Park, I bet it was all an inside job.
The fish?
Yep. I bet it was an insurance
Remember
fraud.
When he first got that job and I told him, he's like, oh, we got to repair the pond. And I'm like, what you need to get is a bunch of fucking snapping turtles. And you're going to put the snapping turtles in there. And at first, he was like, that doesn't seem right. But now the new like slumlord park corrupt superintendent Jeremiah, I bet he's feeding children to the snapping turtles in the pond right now. That's why he's not here.
That's like a new Pizzagate.
Yeah, no, it's Newcastle Gate or whatever you want to call your
yeah Henry Gate,
Henry Gate,
Newcastle. Henry County Gate.
Yeah, whatever you want.
So I wanted to be on record to all the listeners that Jeremiah has. There's a conspiracy that Jeremiah has been feeding his political enemies and children to pond alligators and snapping turtles that he put in there specifically to rule Henry County. Because right, he took us to dinner, right? And like, did you not see?
We
the
went
fear?
To breakfast,
right? Breakfast.
Yeah.
Did you not see the fear front in the owner's
page.
Eyes?
That owner came up, made it like Jeremiah is such a big deal. Let's
recap. James Neese, the next morning, Jeremiah had so much fun that James Neese had to be his designated driver. Yeah.
He was tanked. But, you know, we went there and there's like a fear in the eyes of people in this restaurant that like if I don't cook these eggs the right way, like if they're not over easy to the right consistency, that he might feed me to his alligators in his pond. You know, it's full-blown corruption.
That's
here,
that's why we call him the Boss Hog of Liberty.
Oh, no. Yeah. He's a tyrant. He's a tyrant.
I for one support it. James Neese Sr. needs to live a little. And you can hear the blossoming of Jeremiah Morrill at the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast.
Mm-hmm. He has chemical weapons.
Literally Saddam.
That's our red line.
We need to come up with a Jeremiah Morrill red line.
I looked in his cabinet. Clorox, Lysol, all the shit needed
lime,
to make a bomb.
Lie, he had lie. I haven't seen that since Breaking Bad.
Yeah,
it would be really foolish for Marion County not to do a preemptive strike on like Henry County. Like if you just let this get out of control, next thing you know, Richmond, Muncie, Anderson could be gassed.
Next thing you know, Lion Jair's right at Post Road, knocking on the gates.
He may hide his recreational nukes out at the park.
He is.
That's a good point.
He's literally Ron Swanson.
Well,
no.
We've discredited his reputation.
This has really been a character assassination.
Oh, yeah, it has. I don't think he's going to love it that much, to be totally honest.
He'll be fine. Retaliate on his own podcast.
He can't launch a nuke currently. He tried to. It just blew up, man.
He's the Kim Jong-un of the Libertarian Party.
The hermit kingdom that is Henry County.
Now, Tanner, you're an officer in the party, aren't you?
Yes. I am vice chair.
Awesome.
But honestly, I would vote for Jeremiah for about any position he was running for.
You called him a statist?
Well, I guess it depends who he's running against. But I would definitely vote for him over most libertarians.
Well, that's quite the endorsement.
I can't wait to hear his retaliation.
Going to be coming
on Boss Hog of Liberty. Which, if it's funny, if you listen to the last two episodes, since I made him make that the name of the show, he refuses to call his own podcast that in the intro of it, which is hilarious to me. So it's great. Yeah, it's James. You're thinking of running for chair, right?
Which one, like the national, like or the state chair?
Which would you prefer?
What's going to happen is I'm going to show up. Someone's going to nominate me, like because people are just going to do that. And then at that point, I got to run up there and just be like, I'm about to just stone cold stun everybody off this fucking stage. Like Tim, stone cold stunner. Jesse, maybe a German suplex. I'm going nice on him, but. But, like, it's going to happen. I'm going to go up there, and this is full-blown helicopter. I'm going to start pointing fingers at people that I don't really have an issue with. I'm going to make issues up, kind of like people that are looking for a fight, you know what I mean? Where it's just like, oh, you just stepped on my shoes. Boom, you know? It's like,
you should have theme music.
Yeah, I'll theme music, helicopters coming in.
I'll throw you beers or something.
Yeah, because it's going to be boring with Jesse and just like Tim, you know, just two redheaded ginger people that don't have souls. Talking about the future of the party.
There are only two people running for chair.
Yeah, yeah. Right now we've only got two gingers running for the Libertarian chair.
Well, Noda has a really good chance in this one.
Really? You think?
No,
Noda?
I'm just kidding.
No, I'm just hoping to get the Jewish vote. I'm talking to Sam. Sam hit me up. You know, so,
the one.
The one. So,
oh, God.
No, that's usually what happens at every LP convention. Anyway. There's always like two people or one or two people that are like, oh, I'm going to run for chair. And they go around and do the whole county party circuit. Then once it's convention time, people are just like nominate anybody on there. So we can just nominate like nine people. And they're like, I want to be chair because I just got nominated. See, but the real goal is to be the national chair where like you have such authority where you can actually helicopter people legitimately.
I mean,
like there's a lot of money there. You can definitely buy a helicopter at the national party level. And that's
at least rent for several days.
Well, you got a helicopter James Weeks, Jeff Woods up there in Michigan. Hell, the whole fucking Michigan party just needs to be helicopter.
The entire Michigan LP. Yeah. Even Rob Powell.
And yep, Rob's got to go.
Christy lives near Michigan. She knows what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he's from Michigan, and that's why he wasn't invited, to be honest.
You're going to be Switzerland on this one?
Yes. Yeah.
You got to have a ride home.
Michigan is a place full of communists and communist sympathizers. It's just, it's gone.
Well, I'm neutral because my ex-husband was from
Her ex-husband was from Michigan, and so she's neutral. See, if you don't talk into the mic, they can't hear you. I know you're not a professional like us. So James, now Greg, you're one of the top messaging people in the entire libertarian movement, in my opinion.
Yes.
Have you really thought about what his strategy on the floor should be? Should he run for chair of the Indiana State Party?
Honestly, I think that what he initially came up with the other day when he was talking about a floor fight at a brokered convention of, you've seen my dick.
That's a good platform.
I mean, it's compelling. It's compelling because, you know, he's transparent. You know, what you see is what you get. He's not trying to hide anything. He has no secret agenda.
Nope. Jeremiah's seen it. Jeremiah's parents have seen it. I mean, his sister's seen it. Like, in fact, his family has seen so much of my dick, you'd almost think it's incest.
Probably 40% of the delegation has seen your dick. I think that's compelling.
Yeah. I mean, like, how many people have seen Tim's dick? Jesse's dick?
What? Quite a few have probably seen Tim's dick, but that's a whole different story.
Oh, yeah. That's
not in a Bill Clinton situation, to be fair.
I mean, Tim likes to live it up, but Jesse, has anybody seen Jesse's dick?
Not in a while.
I mean,
Jesse seen Jesse's dick, to be honest?
One story. Like, there's a girl in Indianapolis, right? Like, her name's Jennifer. I'm not going to say her last name. Her name's Jennifer. And, like, I hung out with her one time.
Right.
And this was, like, 4 or 5 years ago. And, like, somehow Riddle sees like I'm a mutual friend with her because he clicked her profile, and I swear to God, like 2 a.m, he's like, "How do you know this girl?" I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about, dude?" And I'm like, "He's like, oh, I just went to school with her." I'm like, "Okay, Jesse."
Easy. Listen, he knows you're alpha.
Yeah, it's he was. I assumed that Jesse was trying to hit it, and he assumed I hit it, and I was like, "No, I got arrested almost, and I wasn't hitting it." So it's
you almost got arrested for what?
Okay. She told me this. I live at this address. I live at blah, 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 Washington Boulevard. Okay, Washington Boulevard's over off Meridian Street. So I'll go to this address. I forgot the number.
Okay.
So I'm knocking on doors, and this woman comes down with her dog, right?
Oh,
and
God.
She does this. She points up at one, like 1 minute. Like, oh, cool, she's going to go get her. So I'm waiting like 5-10 minutes on her porch, right? And I'm like, fuck it, I'm just going to go home. And like 5 minutes later, I'm walking down the street, and like 5 cop cars. Put your fucking hands up. And I'm like, what the fuck, dude? And like, they pat me down. And like, we had calls.
Do you remember the cross street?
It was Washington Boulevard. And like, it's over past, I think, 28th, 22nd.
Oh, God.
Gonna be honest. If the appropriate response is if Neej shows up at your doorstep, you call the cops, right?
This isn't a neighborhood that, I mean, when people are knocking on your door at that time of night, bad things happen.
Right.
It's a really nice neighborhood. It's like the Meridian Hills area. You know, I'm knocking on these doors, and this lady, she looked friendly because she waved and said 1 minute, but I guess she went and called the cops.
Right.
And like, well, we thought you were just trying to break into houses, and I was like, no, like I'm just looking for somebody.
Some strange.
So,
right.
So you know, I didn't want to tell the cops that. It's like, you know, because it's like, oh, like really, like. Looking through people's windows is you trying to get strange? I'm like, you know, we all have our fetishes, bro. Like, but Jesse's like had this weird like, how do you know her? I'm like, Jesse, you trying to hit that, bro? He's like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I'm like, you don't gotta lie to me, dude. It's like, you can hit it or not.
We all have sex, right, Tanner?
Every day, but yeah. I bet Jesse has us all beat though. Combined,
you think he's really out there? That long hair that he's got going on,
yeah, and the goatee type deal. I mean, I'm sure he's slaying him.
the mullets from Muff Diving, like just watch the Kentucky waterfall float through the air. It's just like, let me just get in between them thighs. That's exactly what's going on.
Christy, how dry are you right now? Because I'm so dry.
Women love the Kentucky waterfall.
So moist. All these men in the room, I just can't handle it.
I know, and I'm wearing a Tad.
You can sit down.
I'm wearing a Tad Western shirt.
I'll sit over here.
No. I need one of those.
You can't have one. Greg.
Well, we have sullied the reputation of virtually
literally everyone.
Everyone
we
can think of.
As we ask every episode, why are people friends with us?
This one is even better because this is a. You know, this is for the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, and we're asking how dry one makes you, and then if the other one has slept with most of the people in the party. This is quite the ringing endorsement. I'm shocked more people aren't entering the race.
And then the dark horse, we've seen his dick, is his motto.
That's his motto.
Right.
I mean, today's a good day to talk about it. I mean, it's like it's 128 years ago. We were blessed on this earth by someone that was decided to make Christianity a lot better. So
all I know is okay. I had jokingly, facetiously put Nice on Muammar Gaddafi's body in a general uniform, and then started the rumor that I'm endorsing him for national chair. And it took all of about 30 minutes for me to start getting scolding remarks from everybody.
Everybody.
Sarawak's a great chair. What are you talking about? I'm like, God, you guys need to calm down. Like, I purposely said that, like, the era of cucking was over. And, like, people took that literally. Like, that was the platform James Nice was going to challenge Sarwark on.
We really have, and we're going to talk more about the problems with the Libertarian Party tomorrow on our episode with Jen Gray. But in a serious manner. We need a palate cleanser of seriousness tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that James Nice is going to run for chair, it terrifies people, James.
Well, you know, Nick's national sells used cars, okay? Like, I'm not scared of Nick and his used cars. How about that?
Damn.
How about that?
Catch me outside, Nick. No, Nick's good. sometimes I think he should, like, hammer down a lot on people because he was in like, Pittsburgh or something watching, like, a Penguins game.
He's all on
Facebook Live being like, and this is not how you do it. I'm like, you're posting satanic memes on, like, the Libertarian page. I'm like, that is these satanic memes. And James Weeks is popping a fucking chubby because that's all up these people's alleys. Like, when you post stupid shit like that, it's just like, oh, my God, look how, like, tolerant we are. It's like. And like Mark Rutherford's like, our fucking optics. And you just watch like all these people war over a satanic meme. And I'm like, these memes are like light. Like if I was in charge of social media, you would see so much dank shit rolling through. Like you'd be like, this party is full of fucking crazy. But, you know, Nick's like trying to explain like it's a religious liberty thing. I'm like, no, okay, like 75% of the U.S. is like Christian, right? How many Satanists are like, what, 0.02%? You know,
right.
Like, not even the bad ones, the Levian ones.
60% of the women that I end up dating.
You don't want Levian Satanists in your party. They're the weak ones. They're the ones that are just like, oh, you should live your life. You need your full blown Aleister Crowley, like, I sacrifice, like, people to, like, my pagan lords.
That can you stop crazy. Talking? Because the loudest thunder strike I've ever heard in my life just took place. I don't know if you could pick that up on the mics, but it was
God
so
was
loud.
Not pleased.
God is not happy about this episode. All right, everybody,
about your nuanced defense
join
of paganism.
Hands. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
God's an ANCAP. He's just mad. You know, you mad, bro?
He's laying the thunder. Oh,
because that's just what the LP needs is God against him.
Well, God.
the rest of the deck stacked, but you know what? Why not get God against
God,
us as well?
God was there during the Dallas Accord, and God was there during when like Rothbard wrote his book in 1982. Like, I'm basically pissing God off right now every time I talk about like the bad meme optics. So,
I mean, let's be honest. You go to a Libertarian meeting at pretty much in any county in this country, and it looks like a bunch of child molesters are hanging out. 50-year-old men with terrible mustaches that are dressed like awful, awful Goodwill hangers. I mean, it's not good. All right, we've got a problem in this party. Let's be honest.
Shots helicopters fired. Will fix it.
Should I have not said child molesters? Your face made a.
<they're>... The only reason I say that. It's one, child molesting's bad, and I want that on the record.
I'm not for it. I'm not pro-child molesting.
And the Libertarian Party is not in any way pro-child molestation or recruiting them as active members.
No.
Given some, you might suspect that.
Yeah, one guy who shares a close last name with me, Brad.
Right, that's the reason I cringe, is because there is a very... There's some...
Far fringe part of the party.
Yes, there are a lot of people that, you know, that have publicly talked about how age of consent laws are forced.
Sure.
That I,
Seth.
Seth, for all the reasons you... Never mind.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. There are certain battles you just, you know...
Somebody that I respect a lot, Mary Ruart, Healing Our World, was a very important book in my formation in the libertarian movement. I think in that book, talks about the age of consent.
She does.
And she ran for president in 2008, and it ended her career.
As it should.
Yeah.
Because there are certain things you just don't touch.
Right.
You know.
Like children.
Yeah.
Precisely, regardless of force or not.
Right.
But, you know, there are certain... That's you know, that gets into something entirely different, but... Child molestation, it hits just close enough to home with when you're discussing certain elements of the LP that I'm like...
I didn't say it was full of child molesters. I said it just we need to improve the look of the party
right.
maybe a little bit.
You did.
I'm going
you
back
did.
To optics, okay?
You did. Yeah.
Optics is important.
Well,
and,
all right. All right, less child rapists and more rapists. Let's take the child out of the rapist.
How about we just not violate anybody's personal space, all
yeah.
right?
Let's
follow the nap.
Touch not.
Let's in our act, and also just in the way that we look. Let's you know.
Yeah, we like you know. I was jokingly last
let's be
year.
Be more
that
handsome,
I was
like Tanner.
To, yeah, let's all look. We could all look a lot more like
beautiful.
Tanner.
Tanner. Well, we've posted some photos and videos of Tanner up on the Instagram. Go check it out at We Are Libertarians on the Instagram. You can see what a handsome young man he is. We need
strapping young Tanner was interviewed for the Gary Johnson event by one of the locals.
I know. We need fresh young faces like Tanner to come into the party, and we need people to get involved. Millennials are not joiners. We're not going to meetings, and maybe we should. We show up to meetings and we go, I don't like the people here, and I get it. Trust me. But maybe we need to lead the charge in recruiting people in the party if we're going to make this. You know, Tanner has stepped up; he's the vice chair of his party.
Yep, and then Dakota's the chairman.
And you know, he's another.
The
he's
team.
Tanner's handsome. Dakota's very handsome.
And I not, have handsome sons.
He's got nothing on.
Yeah,
him.
Greg Dakota looks exactly like Greg. I mean, it's uncanny how much you look alike.
We. Are Jimmy wrestlers too. The personalities are rather like, you know, the only thing is I'm a little bit upset with his choice and who he's going to spend the rest of his life with because she's making eyes at you.
Somebody named Audrey Joe.
Audrey Joe's been sliding in DMs.
Yep. She's,
really?
Yeah. I mean, when we did a podcast that will never air, much to the chagrin of Jeremiah, who remembers it to be a great podcast.
Like the last one.
Those of us that listen to that podcast or were sober for that podcast, realize that is never going to air.
Ever.
It was very bad.
As big of a, or as much as we torched people's character today, it was not even close to the effect that podcast would have, should it ever be heard
it's
publicly.
It's not even that we said bad things during the 30-minute podcast during that party. It's that it was just not good. But during that podcast that we recorded, I'm going to be honest, Dakota's girlfriend was making eyes at
Fiance.
Me a little bit. Fiance. And
they're getting married.
Yeah, they're getting married. So talking to that mic for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you see me. You see the slimming body of dear leader.
High T.
Hired a personal trainer this past week. I have.
You kind of look like The Rock.
Exactly.
You start doing inspirational videos on Instagram.
I've talked with Vibbert about doing this. I've actually thought about doing word for word reenactments
yes.
of The Rock's videos.
Hilarious.
In
at
the gym.
The gym.
At the gym and like this hole in the wall gym. And it'd be so fun. I don't know if people would get it. So
yeah, they would. It would be great comedy. Especially on the circuit training, not free weights.
Yes.
Sitting there on the leg machine.
But I have had that idea where I recreate all of The Rock's inspirational exercise
that would
videos.
Be a nice compliment to Larry
yes.
Larry Daniels American Patriot.
Oh, I love Larry Daniels.
Snapchat took the filter away, and so Larry hasn't felt comfortable coming out. He did one video where his fibromyalgia cleared up and just wasn't as effective as it used to be. So that's the dangers of depending on Snapchat for your
can't
all
be trusted
of my
content.
Friends love Larry Daniels.
Really?
Oh, he's widely acclaimed
because like I'll show them all the videos and they just crack up because he's pretty much like most people in Newcastle.
Absolutely. Larry Daniels -American Patriot on Facebook if you want to go and find out what we're talking about. So we're 50 minutes into this, and we've not done a damn thing. Maybe we should get to some of the actual topic. You put together another stellar set of show notes that will be attached at We Are Libertarians to this episode, so you can go and find all the screechings of one Greg Lenz. I don't know how much of this is plagiarized or if you write all this out. But,
oh, no. Like that was mostly like, because, I mean, I can't add a whole lot to the research on marijuana. You know, that isn't something I keep in the old noggin. A lot of it's from Wikipedia and then from several articles. And then, you know, I mean, those are just facts, which some people know, some people don't. So for those that are interested in, you know, the way things came about and how marijuana became so taboo in American society, it's kind of helpful and gives you a full picture. Because I think for the most part, people are incorrect in assuming that the science and the research at the time pointed to conclusions that actually weren't true.
Yeah, what we're going to talk about in this episode is the history of how it became illegal and some of the drug war stats. Let's start with the history, because marijuana is fairly innocuous, in my opinion. I mean, I have not partaken, but Tanner, even though you went to the hospital that night, you're fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I did experiment with marijuana.
In your past life.
I eventually got the experiments down, and I was just smoking it, you know.
Sure.
Because, like, when my elementary teacher accused me of experimenting with it, I mean, I guess she was kind of right.
Right.
But I had the experiments down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're a scientist, above all else.
You could say that, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, which explains the white lab coat. James, you also are an experimenter for science.
I wouldn't call it, like, experimenting or science. I like to call it engineer.
Right.
Because, like, you know, there's times in my life when, like, I've had to smoke, and there's just, like, I don't have anything to smoke out of. And it's, like, I have an old, I know those old kerosene lamp tops that are, like, take some aluminum foil, take an apple, you know. When you have to build, like, smoking contraption, whatever you need to, it prepares you.
You're a MacGyver, really, of marijuana imbibing.
I can smoke out of anything, like these Mrs. Dash containers. I can smoke out of someone's butthole. I don't give a fuck. I'll smoke out of it.
Of people smoking out of their own hand.
Like, there's a guy smoked out of his own nose. Like, he's put it there and lit it. Yeah, people smoke out of their own orifices. Like,
why not get a pack of Zigzags or something?
Because I ain't got time for that. I ain't got time. You got to smoke. You got to smoke right now. Like,
right.
Anything.
Those desperate times call for desperate measures.
Can't you just eat the weed? Like, can't you just...
No, it's got to be activated by heat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, like, unless you make, like, you can cook it and make brownies,
again, activated by heat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he gave me a very scientific answer.
Oh, he's a scientist.
He's a scientist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Greg didn't raise no dummies. So
couldn't be more proud of you, son.
The interesting thing about the research that we've put into this, and by we, I mean Greg, have found it, really the William Randolph Hearst stuff, a lot of libertarians repeat it, but let's start at the beginning, and I think you'll find the Randolph Hearst stuff a little bit interesting, because it's not quite accurate what most people talk about, but...
I mean, this is probably redundant, because I know there's a big portion of the Libertarian Party and libertarians in general for who pot is the driving reason they're a member of the party.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Because it's so asinine that it's illegal in the first place.
Right. And then, you know, it's something that it really does have quite a coalition behind it. Like, it really has a lot of support, and it's a community, and really people hang out that are behind this coalition.
If you go back to the beginning of this country, so let's start at the beginning. Hemp was not only it was encouraged, it was mandatory to grow.
The colony in Jamestown, they encouraged everyone to end up making it. And but the reason why was primarily for the King of England wanted the production of rope and sails and clothing to be made out of hemp.
Okay.
And so then you had the Virginia Assembly in 1619 who actually passed legislation. So this is a good, 160 years before the country, we had the independence or the Declaration of Independence. So in 1619, the Virginia Assembly passes a law that requires every single farmer within Virginia to grow it.
Right.
So it was against the law to not grow it. And it was even in, since there wasn't a dollar then, it was legal currency.
Hmm.
You exchanged for products, and that was the denomination you exchanged with. And so that goes on all the way up until obviously the founding. And at Jamestown, the Virginia Company actually enacted the decree. So it was at the company was at the behest of the King of England. And he's the one who said that, that any landowner needed to export a minimum of 100 plants to support England's cause. So it was used to finance England's empire.
George Washington grew hemp?
Absolutely, yeah. At Mount Vernon. And, you know, that's the first president. And it, where it really got problematic was starting into, there was really not much of a problem up until about the mid-1850s.
Right.
That's when things really started, you know, right around the time of the Civil War.
That's and, really when all the do-gooders started.
Yeah, because... what happened is that if it was available over the counter and there wasn't any science or research, you know, to back up the claims, then it was a poison law. And the poison laws required anything that didn't have the poison laws generally required either labels on the packaging indicating the harmful effects of drugs or prohibited the sale outside of licensed pharmacies and without a doctor's prescription. And so that means anything like Super Male Vitality, for instance, would have to have the label poison on it. Rather than just saying not FDA approved.
Right.
So that's already starting behind the eight ball quite a bit because you're specifically saying that anything not doctor approved is poison.
And we should pause and maybe James can enlighten us a little bit. Hemp, Tanner too, being a scientist, hemp is not pot. Like I think people have the misconception that hemp, the plant, it's just there. It doesn't have the active THC, especially strains now, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like there's like multiple tiers of it. That makes sense. Like you have what is it? Like indica and sativa. When you get the next stuff that's psychoactive and reactive
well,
to you.
Well, those are the female plants. Like the male plants are the plants that pollinate the female plants, but the male plants don't actually grow like nuggets or flowers, anything like that. And that's pretty much what a hemp plant is, but it's like one of the strongest materials that anybody knows of.
It's also extremely hardy. So here in Indiana, which is prime hemp growing area, you can get three crops of it here in Indiana. I mean, and there's still a tax on it in Indiana. And it's an incredibly hardy plant that can be grown in a bunch of different soils. Mm-hmm. But in Midwestern soils, it thrives.
Yeah, it just flourishes. Well, yeah. I mean, you consider the our founding documents are written on it.
Yeah.
You know, that's how vital it was to the early American experience.
The revolutionary uniforms were all made out of hemp clothing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was vital to the American economy, and then it just sort of fell into slow decline as really consumer protectionism is what drove it all, you know.
Right,
the
poison laws
or trying to... You know, you need to disclose that it can have narcotic effects, things like this. And then, you know, we were already all the way up until around in 1906, the Pure Food and Drug Act was passed by Congress, and it required that certain special drugs, including cannabis, be accurately labeled with contents. So it was not all that different than requiring restaurants to disclose all the nutritional facts.
Sure.
It'd be the equivalent of that at the time. And so previously, many drugs had been sold as patent medicines with secret ingredients or misleading labels. And this was designed to protect consumers by, you know, protecting trade secrets of like Super Male Vitality by not disclosing it.
The snake oil stuff.
Right.
And we still struggle with this today. I mean, obviously, we're not for government regulation and mandatory labeling or any of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, getting into fitness and trying to build muscle, I've gotten into taking supplements. And so I've had to do research because that field right now is full of absolute bullshit.
Oh, it's the Wild West.
Absolutely. And so you've got to really do your research about what you're taking, and it's due diligence as opposed to, you know...
The government said this was okay, and so I can just take it.
Exactly right. Like we have in the pharma industry where politicians get bought off and then craft laws for drug agencies. You know, if you go watch Prescription Thugs on Netflix by Chris Bell, it is a great documentary about the prescription drug industry. And you look at marijuana, and you look at the pharmaceutical industry. Like I went through to get some medicine from the pharmacist yesterday, and I'm sitting there, and the pharmacist has a button on that says "Hugs, not drugs," and I the inner libertarian in me wanted to just go, you realize the irony of that, right? The fact that you are the one pushing OxyContin out of this window into cars and feeding pill addictions, you know, ADHD drugs, which are amphetamines, but you're telling people not to take heroin, which is the exact same thing as the OxyContin that you're pushing. You know, I mean, and so if you watch Prescription Thugs, you really see how out of whack. And they also have one called Bigger, Faster, Stronger by Chris Bell. Same people who talk about the anabolic steroids. That is an illegal drug. But if you look at the way the anabolic steroids, which aren't going to kill you, you can fuck up your hormones.
They give you
badly.
Prednisone when you have a bad viral infection, a bad bacterial infection.
But you will not die if you take steroids. It will not kill you. And it is treated, and the messaging is treated like this horrendous drug. Meanwhile, you know, and so these two, it starts with Bigger, Faster, Stronger and moves into Prescription Thugs, documenting, you know, their struggles with pill addictions, their brother, his struggle with pill addictions and ultimate passing. And so what is legal in terms of drugs doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be safer.
No. And oftentimes, you know, it's specifically not safer because so much money has been spent lobbying to keep it legal. You know, there are just billions and billions of dollars. Well, maybe not. Well, actually, yeah, since the founding of lobbying, you know, back during Abraham Lincoln's days, you know, I would argue that as the pharmaceutical industry came up and pushed for laws like even in 1925, right. The International Opium Convention, which, you know, basically regulated for the first time Indian hemp. Since that point forward, they've spent billions and billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Things that would have normally gotten flagged, like under prohibition with alcohol, they got the blind eye and they were approved. And, well, you know, donate X amount of money and we'll make sure that this is still available with a doctor's prescription.
Right.
Which is no different than extortion. Really. I mean, if you were being honest, it's no different than saying, you know, the politician saying, well, pay us X. We'll make sure that you have your business's safety.
Sure.
Or, you know, or like the mob used to do in New York neighborhoods, where you won't have any problems with break-ins if you pay us this fee. It's the same thing with, you know, pharmaceutical industry. You won't have any loss in revenue as long as you pay XYZ to my political action committee.
You can make a lot of money by not just like narcotic drugs, right? But you can go to Mexico. You can go to like some South American country where like it's just dirt cheap for medications. And what people would used to do was like you could pick up a shipment of Gonal F, which is an injectable. It's something to regulate your menstrual cycle, something to regulate your ovaries. Basically, women with PCOS use this because it's either they have no period at all, they're going through early menopause, or they just can't ovulate or something like that. So fertility drugs are like a massive industry. Mm-hmm. Massive. IVF treatments like 15, 20K, something like that.
A pop.
So you can go buy like a dozen canisters of these in like Bolivia or Mexico when you go on like a trip there because you can buy it over the counter there. And that probably cost you like $20 for a package. Here in the U.S., it costs $2,200 for like an injectable Gonal F. You can take that on Craigslist or take that on trying to conceive forms, any of these mom forms where people post, I have 5 preserves of Gonal F. You just made like $9,000 right there.
But you can't actually resell.
Oh, you can.
That isn't a violation of federal
it's
law.
It's not a scheduled drug. You have to get a prescription to order it here, but it's not a scheduled drug.
Really? So they go down there. Essentially, it's no different than what the movie Blow is, where they just fly down there, bring a bunch of pop back, except it's not illegal.
Yeah,
do they like, ship?
It has to, for it to be an illegal possession, it has to be on a schedule. Schedule 1, Schedule 2, right. Schedule 3. Gonal F, Clomid, any of these other like medications like Viagra and stuff, like they have to have a prescription to order it. And, like, you can't really transport it across like federal lines and stuff like that. Due to, like, basically, it's a tax issue at that point.
Right.
It's tax evasion
if you don't claim the sale.
Yeah, but you can get pulled over by a cop. You know, if you had like a bag of weed, you're going to go to jail. And you have like 5 syringes of Gonal F, they're not going to get anything of it. There's no reason for them to arrest you to possess it. So you can sell it and trade it however you want to. There's notes outside clinics, fertility clinics, say I have 20 extra pills of Clomid that I'm trying to get rid of. They're all over the fertility clinics. You can definitely sell those if you want to.
Interesting.
Well, another big thing that's going on is like the research chemical market. I know they have them for steroid type drugs, but they pretty much have research chemicals that can act just like any other drug. One of them is called it's a nerve medicine, and it's not scheduled in like 48 states, but it's legal in Canada and whatnot. So you can have it here. You just have to have a bag that says not for human consumption.
And, I mean, I don't know why they don't just get rid of the drug laws and let people take care of themselves.
Well, it's not politically possible. Like, that's what drives so much of this, is it's hard to talk about the drug war, like, because you can't separate the politics from the logic of it, you know?
Right.
You know, if it were just pure and simple logic, people would look at the money we've spent on the drug laws since inception. Really, I mean, if you take the amount of money we've spent with since the creation of the war on drugs, as well as the Federal Department of Education, and the amount of money we've spent since then, it's the exact equivalent of the United States debt, $20 trillion. And we've not moved the needle in either situation. And so that, and in fact, we've made it worse.
Yeah.
So no person could logically look at that and say, well, this is effective, we should keep these programs.
But
it's so politically popular, there's very little you can do about it.
And let's actually review some of those stats.
Yeah.
Some of the stats on the drug war.
The stats on the drug war, I mean, are insane. Yeah, so over the past four decades, federal and state governments have spent alone just on the drug war, $1 trillion.
Four decades.
40 years. We've spent $1 trillion, and we have not made a dent in any of the usage numbers. In fact, it's gone up in other, you know, it's sort of morphed into where the usage has gone.
We've shared these stats on Twitter and Facebook, too, if you want to enlighten your Facebook friends. In 1980, the United States had 50,000 people behind bars for drug law violations. Now we have more than 500,000. That makes us the largest jailer in the world.
Yeah, the United States, you know, not only being the world's largest economy, we imprison more of our citizens than any other country in the world.
Is that $51 trillion that we spend annually on the war on drugs?
$51 billion.
$51 billion, okay.
Yeah, billion, $51 billion annually.
I mean, it's for if you have a prison industry and you're kind of getting money based on, like, prisoners, or you need to have, like, some sort of, like, prison quota or an arrest quota, really, it's easier to prove that you're on drugs or have possession of drugs than it is to prove that you murdered somebody. Like, if Tanner were to go out there and to shoot somebody, or Greg were to shoot somebody, or I were to shoot somebody, there's a lengthy trial process. Like, cops have to spend hours upon hours upon hours gathering evidence, to get to prepare a case for it. A whole slew of things have to go for violent crime like that. Even robbery and theft and stuff. They have to track it down. They have to go to pawn shops, find the actual object, because you have to prove I stole this. With drugs and alcohol specifically, all you got to do is blow into, like, a tube or pee in a cup, and as long as that thing marks as something that says positive, then you're in possession, you're high currently. So it's easier for me to lock you up for drug offenses than for me to lock you up for violent offenses, because I don't have to prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt. You just have to pee in a cup or have a smell on you. Like, you smell like marijuana, and you give me enough probable cause to search you. If I find, like, one leaf or one pill, I have probable cause to throw you in jail. It's the easiest thing to arrest you
over. That's low-hanging fruit. Yeah. Especially, like, in Indiana, where we've used private prisons, and Corizon's someone we've talked about in the past. If you remember Amanda's story, you know, it's a for-profit prison management company that gets, you know, they win the contract, mm-hmm. and they're guaranteed levels of, levels of imprisonment, because they have to, you know, they have to. They get paid a per imprisoned person fee. And so they say that there will be a minimum of XYZ, and you've created and I'm not saying that they say, oh, well, this month, man, it looks like we're a little low, we better go out and arrest some people. Like, I doubt that's a conversation that takes place, but it very much has created an incentive to keep the jails as full as possible. Because in 2015, you had the case where U.S. drug law violations amounted to 1.488 roughly million arrests. Now, the number of these arrests that were for just possession is almost 1.25. So 84% of the arrests are simply for possession.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I mean, because you can't just get people for violent. It's just the numbers game as well. Like, not only is, like, an easier to detect you for using drugs to lock you up or arrest you for that, it's like you have to wait for people to do violent crime. Like,
right.
You can't be proactive to find it.
And so, nearly 50% of those arrests are just for marijuana.
Yeah.
And I want you to go check out one of our other podcasts called The Cost. And this is actually episode 91 of the podcast called Rachel's Story, where, you know, she sells 16 OxyContin and she dies in prison. And you hear the cost of this policy on her family, on her life, and the prison system that we have set up designed to warehouse these people. And it is so easy. And the documentary, The House I Live In, highlights this better than anything else. Where these are just numbers that we're throwing out, but these are human lives that are destroyed. You know, what was the stat about college admissions that you had in the research? 200,000 college kids.
Oh yeah, they're no longer eligible for financial aid annually. 200,000 lose financial aid eligibility because of a drug conviction.
Right, because you know,
and that is the exact opposite of everything that you should want to do from a rehabilitation perspective.
Absolutely, because you give them a record. Meanwhile, back in the day, back in the late 60s, Mitch Daniels, the
sold it.
The governor of Indiana, would still be the president of the United States had he wanted to run. He's currently the president of Purdue University. He got caught with a shoebox full of pot and LSD in his dorm room and was given leniency by the judge and not given a felony. Here's one of the brightest men and a real thinker, a real public servant.
Absolutely.
And somebody who would have had their life ruined had that happened today.
Absolutely. You would have never heard of him, you know, and it would have set him on a totally different path where any type of public service would have not been possible. And our state would have been worse off for it.
Yeah. And I'm going to play you a little bit from the house I live in. This is The Wire. If you've never watched The Wire on HBO, it is probably the greatest TV show ever made. I love The Wire. I love The Sopranos. I love Breaking Bad. I love Mad Men. But The Wire, man, you watch The Wire and you're just, it is crack, especially if you're into politics like we are. It is the most accurate portrayal of government bureaucracy and the effect it has on human lives. And every cop friend, every teacher, everybody I ever run into in public service, I ask if they've seen The Wire, and they all go, yep, that's exactly what it's like. You know, if you're a police officer, the guys who make it and in the political realm of the police department aren't the good cops. They're the politicians. And those people are bad cops, but good politicians, and they're the ones crafting policy to save their own ass. And, you know, the court systems are the same way, the mandatory. And so David Simon, who created that show, really has just this little clip. You hear he just sums up the drug war in such a chilling way and nails it. So take a listen.
Say it this way, because it's more honest. Instead of saying, let's get rid of all these drug addicts and drug dealers, and once we throw away the key on them, we'll solve this problem. Why don't you try saying it to yourself this way? All these Americans that we don't need anymore, the factories are closed, we don't need them, you know, the textile mills, they're gone, GM is closing plants. We don't need these people. They're extra Americans. We don't need them. Let's just get rid of the bottom 15% of the country. Let's lock them up. Maybe, in fact, let's see if we can make money off locking them up in the short term. Even though it's going to be an incredible burden for our society, even though it's going to destroy these families, you know, where these people are probably integral to the lives of other Americans, let's just get rid of them. You know, I mean, at that point, why don't you just say kill the poor? If we kill the poor, we're going to be a lot better off. Because that's what the drug war's become.
So you hear that and you go, wow, okay, that puts it in human terms. The bottom 15% of the population were just warehousing because we've destroyed the economy. And that's why you get a Donald Trump. You get a Donald Trump who says, you know, I'm gonna make these things better. And now, unfortunately, Donald Trump seems to not have the libertarian streak in terms of the drug war. And he certainly put somebody in as AG who is not marijuana friendly.
Drugs and alcohol killed his oldest brother, Fred Jr., and so that's why, like, he doesn't drink at all.
Got it.
And so, like, that's why he's so anti-drug and drug alcohol.
Personal motivation doesn't necessarily make good public policy.
Makes terrible public policy.
Absolutely.
Right. It does. I mean, that's just why. That's not, you know, saying it's good or bad. It's just that's the reason he's so anti-drug and alcohol. His oldest brother was the favorite, and he died because of alcoholism and drug use.
I will share that video to the Facebook page on 420 today. I think I posted it a year ago on 420, but I'll do it again right now.
I mean, a lot of it, too, was when Dr. Heath from Tulane University in 1974 did that study where they were trying to tell if cannabis killed your brain cells, and they literally suffocated the monkeys with smoke. Mm-hmm. So whenever they checked, all their brain cells were dead.
Because of the smoke.
Exactly.
That's the thing, is so much of the science that was used to justify it was knowingly poor.
Mm-hmm.
But they went ahead and used it anyway and then politically charged it. Because, you know, really for Nixon, Nixon really turned the war on drugs into a racist thing. His former aide, Bob Ehrlich, I believe is his name, he talked about in a Vanity Fair interview, I can pull it up, what he said, which really was an enlightening thing to me, because I, you know, you always want to assume that the government gets things wrong. That ultimately they get a lot of things wrong, but you don't want to think necessarily that the intent's evil. This is a situation where the intent was clearly evil, and that was always going to be the case, and it was specifically targeted towards people they didn't like for racist intentions. And that's what really drove me crazy. Is so Ehrlich, John Ehrlichman tells a Harper's for Harper's Bazaar in an interview, Dan Baum on the April cover story.
I'll read it. You understand what I'm saying. We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war, Vietnam, or black. But by getting to associate the hippies with marijuana and the blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about drugs? Of course we did. And then he went on to say, you understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or black. They made it criminal to be against the war or black, is what he's saying. This is the senior advisor.
And his chief of staff was Dick Cheney, who proposed the idea that, you know, this would be something that they had tested that was popular. So that,
right.
To bring this all together, that's stunning, really, that
yeah.
One, Dick Cheney at 31's chief of staff to the president, but two, they weaponized and made a political issue out of marijuana because they wanted to go after, you know, political dissenters. And a lot of, at that time, that was the Black Panthers a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a big portion of them. And then Haight-Ashbury hippies. And then they wanted to go after urban communities who they felt needed, you know, law and order.
You have to understand you have the summer of 69, and if you watch the Eyes on the Prize documentary about the civil rights movement, you know, you get the feel good stuff, but then after King is assassinated, you know, starting with Stokely Carmichael and the rise of the Black Panthers in Oakland, and the Black Power movement that was really pushed forth by Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam, what the civil rights movement eventually evolves into is a very angry movement. Mm-hmm. Understandably, we're at this point in the 60s, we're not even 100 years out of slavery, and you know, you're a couple generations away from slaves, one generation, two generations, and
in large segments of society, nothing changed whatsoever.
Absolutely, black people did not vote in the South.
They were deterred from it.
It isn't just like today, where we take it for granted, where there's quote unquote voter disenfranchisement. It is literally not one black was registered in 80% black counties in Mississippi. I mean, it was absolutely outrageous. And so, you know, I think the Black Power movement was absolutely necessary in terms of taking a people who had never been descended from kings and queens in Africa. Shut up, niece. And
we was kings.
But it's the truth. I mean, here are people who at one point were self-sufficient, stripped of all self-sufficiency. I mean, if you've ever had a friend who's been in an abusive relationship, this is systematic stripping, and you have to have that rebuilding of confidence. And the Black Power movement, I think, was a natural reaction to that, and it eventually, that anger was stoked into massive riots. I mean, in 1969, if you read about the Summer of Rage, you read about these riots that, like, to put it into context, like Ferguson, Missouri, everybody freaked out. Oh, those blacks are getting out of control in Ferguson. No, you had entire cities all across the nation,
Chicago,
burning from 68 to 72. I mean, and so Nixon was under a tremendous amount of pressure from the quote-unquote silent majority to get the blacks under control. And so he couldn't just come out and say, I'm going to get the blacks under control. So he started the war on drugs, and you see the effect. It systematically has destroyed the black family. It has taken, you know, if you listen to episode 161 and 163, you hear the effects of that on the black community. Now, James has been smirking and laughing the whole time that I have been talking, so what do you have to say for yourself, son?
Son's kind of a racist term, but...
Well, you're the least black person in the room.
Well, I mean, it was just because you said we was Kangs. You know,
I didn't say it like that. I
mean, no, you didn't. You didn't say it in the 4chan vernacular, but...
No. I didn't realize that that was a 4chan thing.
Oh, that's a huge 4chan thing.
Okay,
that's why he was giggling.
You're saying memes, and like I speak in memes.
I didn't realize that. James has the license... His license plate has 4chan in the license plate. Which is hilarious to me.
I mean, you
as it should be.
You can't say like, oh, and then like they come descended from kings without like people. Greg knew what you said. Like everybody here knew what you said, dude.
Right, because you guys are racist fucks. That's why.
No, it's just a meme. It's a fun meme.
We so eloquently moved past you promoting Hitler's 128th birthday.
But when
earlier.
Someone's talking about it and. Like talking about that exact same thing, and pretty much says, "We was kings and shit." Like, my first thought is to laugh.
I know, but
no, it's true though.
But that is why Nixon. Ultimately, Nixon was a racist fuck, like every other greatest generation baby boomer person. Like baby boomers at their heart. And I'm gonna go. I cannot wait to read this book that I just got. Which is I'll have to look up the title, but
it's a generation of narcissists or sociopaths.
Yeah,
or
a generation
like that.
Of sociopaths.
The baby boomers.
It's an anti-baby boomer book, and I'm so excited to read it. I bought it. I couldn't buy it fast enough.
You couldn't wait to post it to Facebook.
I posted
to start
it to
wrestling
Facebook.
Jimmies out of everybody that's over 50 in your friend circle.
A generation of sociopaths: How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America by Bruce Gibney. And then, I've continued by posting George Carlin's Whining Baby Boomers, 10 Reasons Baby Boomers Are the Worst Generation by the guy that started Vice. What's his face?
Oh, God. I know who you're talking about, but I don't know him that well.
Yeah, Cucky McCuckerson.
Gavin McInnes.
Yeah.
But the baby boomers at their core, because of the way that they were raised... They still had that institutional racist thing going on. Now, although, to be fair, my mom was a baby boomer, and I was taught, as she was taught by her parents, that people are not different. And I think largely we are not a racist generation because of the teaching of our parents. But the policies of Dick Cheney sure are racist as shit.
Yeah, I mean... Yes, and we know this going back further. I mean that the black society has been targeted since they came here.
Yeah,
they were targeted in the 20s. With the coordination of the eugenics movement and the Southern Baptist League going around and trying to promote essentially what became Planned Parenthood with Margaret Sanger. You know, and that's what's called the black genocide. You know, 18.5 million babies were not born because of that organization.
Right.
And so you have that, and then you have they were an easy political target because they were a rising, hostile, abrasive movement that the majority of Americans weren't comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were easy targets because of this one element of their society that they could really hone in on. And prevent it from leaking over into, you know, white suburban picket fence, 2.5 kids, you know, the American dream, mom that stayed at home and apple pie.
And that sure didn't include black families moving in next door.
No, and that's specifically what they wanted. You know, that's specifically why it was such an easy pass, an easy thing, is that it was relatively clean to implement and that it wouldn't carry over into much of the elements.
Clean.
It was a clean policy. It wasn't messy. There wasn't a lot of crossover between those elements of society. White suburban America and inner city African American communities didn't mix specifically because of it, America hadn't integrated yet.
I mean, to put it in Spangle terms, POC lost this round.
Yes, exactly. And the thing about the marijuana is.
The marijuana,
the pots, is that it goes back
those
before
jazz cigarettes.
Yeah, those jazz cigarettes. It goes. I mean, Nixon turned it. He politicized it. But going back before, it had been weaponized. Going back to the creation of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics in 1936, and that bureau drafted a legislative plan for Congress seeking a new law. The head of it was Harry Anslinger, and he ran a campaign, a public campaign against marijuana as the head of this new division. and newspaper mogul William Randolph Hearst's empire of newspapers used the yellow journalism pioneered by Hearst to demonize the cannabis plant and spread a public perception that there were connections, verifiable, you know, public research connections between cannabis and violent crime. And he went about promoting that through the news and propaganda, for essentially. And also the movie Reefer Madness had come out. And Reefer Madness was something that hit American society like a, like, it scared every housewife in America at the time in 1936.
Right.
It was intentional propaganda to result in what Randolph Hearst and Anslinger were seeking. And so several scholars have always argued that the goal was to destroy the hemp industry, largely as an effort of Hearst, Andrew Mellon, who was Secretary of the Treasury, and the DuPont family. And they argue with that the invention of decortator? Is that
the decordator?
The decordator.
Basically, hemp is very hard to decord and pull apart. And then there was this invention that made that very easy. And it went from, you know, black plantation freed slaves doing it to a machine.
And it became a cheap substitute.
Like the cotton gin.
Yeah, that was used in the newspaper industry to print newspapers on. The problem with that is
Eli Whitney.
Yeah, and the problem with that was Hearst, his newspapers, owed a large debt to Canadian suppliers at the time. So he had taken on a whole bunch of debt to sort of corner the industry on newspaper production in a different raw materials. And so if an alternative raw material for paper emerged, it would have lowered the prices of the paper needed for him to actually be able to print his. And so that is why he sought, through government influence and through helping with yellow journalism with Anslinger, to have it systematically outlawed and, you know, made it Schedule One. And so Mellon, as Secretary of the Treasury and America's wealthiest man at the time, he had also invested heavily in nylon, which is his company, DuPont. It was their new synthetic fiber. And nylon's success depended on it replacing the traditional resource, hemp. So the company, DuPont, and many industrial historians dispute a link between nylon and hemp. They argue that the reason for the development of nylon to produce a fiber that could compete with silk and rayon, for example, and thin stockings for women, was that silk was much more expensive than hemp and imported largely from Japan. And so there was more money in a substitute for silk. So DuPont focused early on thin stockings for women and as a commercial product, nylon as a revolution in textiles. And that also, I mean, so you have the Secretary of the Treasury and then you have America's greatest, you know, tabloid salesman purposely working against hemp, trying to make sure that it wouldn't run their businesses or have any potential harm toward their ability to continue on.
Right.
And they coordinated with the highest levels.
Yeah.
And I know that goes down the rabbit hole of things, allegations of things that you'll never be able to verify, because if there were any conversations that took place, they'll never be on the public record anyway.
Absolutely.
But right. It's convenient when there are interests that align, and especially when it's men that work in government and men that are as wealthy as wealthy can be at that time in American
right.
history. Yeah, I mean, it's like we were saying, the most disappointing thing about any type of consumer protectionism, for the most part, that I've encountered when researching government, is that it is never it's good intentions they're after, or they claim, but the good intentions are used to mask and disguise against the real intentions.
Right.
It's never the other way around. You know, it's never that it was for good intentions, it was pursued, and then as a corollary, it allowed people to get rich off
right.
of cartel behavior and cronyism. It's cronyism masked in the good intentions of protecting American consumers from the boogeyman in whatever industry or product it is.
Well, and I think it's with something like heroin, for instance, it's easy for even libertarians who, you know, while we're against government, you go, yeah, but, you know, like, decriminalize marijuana, but heroin, baby libertarians are always like, yeah, but heroin, I'm just not there yet because it's harmful and there's no redeeming quality to heroin.
Lies. Lies. Here's one. Opium in its pure form is pretty safe. Like, you can smoke it all fucking day, like, if you want to, and, like, you can get high as you want off opium.
Right.
The reason why heroin's so toxic isn't because of, like, how much heroin, like, you're injecting. It's because they cut it with so much junk. Like,
right.
They cut it with bleach. They cut it with...
Even fentanyl.
Yeah.
Like, it's killing everybody.
A lot of the heroin you buy on the streets isn't really heroin. It's basically horse tranquilizer. And,
yeah.
Like, of course it's going to kill you. You're injecting stuff that's meant to take down a 1,000-pound animal. And you're, like, 130-pound tweaker going about there eating, like, tranquilizers. But, like, opium was pretty safe. It's just because it's you have to push mass amounts of qualities or drugs under in an illegal market, and demand is so high for these drugs. You need to, when you get your supply, you have to cut it with so much stuff to extend it so you can meet all the supply and demand. So you're throwing whatever in there, like a household cleaner, medication from the cabinet, whatever you can get in there to make the batch stronger, make it last longer. So people are dying because they're injecting stuff that they think is heroin, that they think is opium or whatever, and it's cut with like 15, 16 other ingredients that they could have reactions to. So a lot of people are suffocating and dying because they think they're getting a small dose of opium or a small dose of heroin, but they're taking horse tranquilizer.
Right.
And, you know, it's like I always disagree with that.
So the illegal status of it is what's driving the contamination, which is actually the driver of the death.
Yeah. Because you can only get so much. When you have to logistically import opium from like Afghanistan or cocaine
from ISIS.
Yeah, you know, we have to import
the Taliban.
It's not like you can just import barrels of this stuff because you have to get through customs. So they might get a small shipment that's able to get through, and you have a small shipment. You have hundreds of clients that each need certain amounts they want to get. So you don't have enough to get to all those clients, and you have to make your money back. So now you're cutting it with stuff to extend the supply, to increase the strength, so people get hooked onto it more, so people are able to buy what they need to buy. So after you cut all the stuff, you send it out there, they don't know what they're cutting it with, so people end up dying from it. It's like, oh, well, he died. Well, yeah, I was cutting it with ketamine, you know? So I robbed a veterinary clinic, and I stole tranquilizers and cut it with.
You're telling me that Brett Bittner's been cutting this and no, selling it as keto?
That's keto.
Oh, shit.
It's not keto, the ketogenic diet.
I thought Brett Bittner was selling heroin on a black market through ketamine. Facebook, and I was going to expose it right here.
Go ahead.
I mean, you're definitely just dying because it's illegal, and like because they have to cut it, because they have to make their supply quotas.
Yeah, the illegal status is the reason that they're, you know, that's the whole motivation behind it being contaminated.
All right, like are cocaine leaves, like the leaves that coca comes from, are they really that fatal? I mean, people in South America ate those for thousands of years.
Right, that's why they were such hard workers, picking the cocoa leaves.
Or is it fatal because you sit there and you grind it up, you make the powder from it, you throw whatever ingredients into it, and people just tend to snort more and more and more until they die. It's when you process it, and you over-process it, that it becomes kind of deadly. Marijuana can be deadly, too. If I process it with formaldehyde, if you want the extra kick.
Well, yeah, and that's the formaldehyde deadly, not the marijuana. So you can't actually overdose on marijuana, mm-hmm. am I right?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I've ever heard of anybody ever overdosing on marijuana.
Right, zero deaths from overdose. Like, yeah. You know, many binge drinking deaths annually in the United States.
100%, yeah.
Some of the weed you can buy on the streets has been laced. Like, there's people lace it with PCP. Like, you don't know until after you smoke it. You know, like, oh, I'm going to get high. Oh, it's laced with PCP because it's a stronger weed. People are like, oh, it's stronger. Next thing you know, you're taking like 9 bullets to the face and still going. You know, it's just like, oh, shit, it's a freaking Incredible Hulk. But, you know, I think a lot of the drugs have issues because they're cut, you know, so if we didn't cut them, if there was just a way to get it in a pure form, I mean.
And not to be devil's advocate, but essentially, what's to stop anyone from meshing the two regardless? So let's say it's all legalized, and then why not infuse, you know, those types of, mixtures, those combinations, now that there's nothing and no one involved at all?
Well, because people like to shop, okay? Like, if I smoke pot and I say I don't like to smoke sativa. Because I don't like to feel like, I don't like the head high. I like to prefer indica. I like the body high. I like to couch lock myself and go to sleep. At least when it's legalized, I can go to like a store and I can pick and choose the amount of indica I can have in my cut or my blend. You know, I could be like, oh, well, this is like 65% indica and 20% sativa or whatever. I'm able to pick and choose that on the market. I don't have to be like, well, I bought some weed. Let me smoke it. Let me see if it's what I actually bought and paid for. Because like the worst thing for me in college was, if I wanted to sit there and couch lock and I hit the bong and next thing you know, and it's not an indica heavy blend. This is a sativa heavy blend. Next thing you know, I'm paranoid all night. I'm just looking out windows, you know, because it's a mind high. Now I'm freaking out. Being able to go to a store and choose what I can prepare myself and my body. I can prepare for what I'm about to go through. I don't have to guess, you know, so that helps a lot. So people would probably still do that, but as long as I can go to a store and be like, well, this is just opium.
Right.
I can choose it.
You should know what you're getting.
I guess a lot of it comes down to, you know, at the end of the day is that, like, with the libertarians that aren't ready for, they're not ready to say, you know what, if you want to do heroin, do heroin.
My point is, before James's passionate defense of heroin. was that,
well, it's, well, that's with, the thing is with, it's logical and well intentioned. It's just a hard sell.
But people want to protect others from heroin. People, right. Marijuana is one of those things that if you listen to Addie's story, which I forget what number, but if you listen
like
to
201.
That, yeah, if you download the cost, then no, it was somewhere in the 190s, 191, 193. Addie's story, where we're talking about how CBD oil, cannabis oil, has helped her epilepsy, and you can hear it in the cost.
Well, I mean, you have the former Surgeon General of the United States saying that he thinks that it should be fully researched for all medical uses. Sanjay Gupta.
Even Hillary Clinton was saying during the campaign, we should deschedule it. She wasn't going to totally deschedule. She's going to take it from a one, which makes it a narcotic. Like, you have to understand, under federal law, they have drug scheduling. And drug schedules go into sentencing and outlawing and all that kind of stuff. Marijuana is lumped in with heroin, amphetamines, ketamine, all these, you know, like OxyContin.
The fatal drugs. The lethal
fatal
drugs.
Cocaine, crack, meth.
Addictive drugs, which marijuana is not.
Right. And so you have some medical benefits to marijuana that people, it's indisputable now. And
even from the limited research that's been allowed, that's the thing, is the majority of the medicinal research has been on tiny, tiny scale.
Tanner never wanted to smoke pot, okay? But Tanner had lost his leg, and he smoked so much weed that eventually your leg grew back, right?
Yeah, it did take about 3 years, but it started out as a little, like,
a nubbin
on the cannabis oil, and my knee was cut off, and someone told me to try it, and I started doing this thing called dabbing. And I started dabbing, and sure enough, about 2 weeks later, a little noodle-looking thing popped up on the end of my nub. And the more I dabbed, the bigger it got, and now I have a full leg again.
That's great. See, miracles happen with marijuana. You have a benefit to it, and so the protectionism that started 100 years ago and accelerated because of this false notion that it's a gateway drug, I know a lot of pot smokers. And the truth is, here's the dirty little secret. The majority of adults that you interact with on a daily basis smoke pot.
Or have done it quite frequently at one point in their life.
Most of them are smoking pot now, Greg. I don't know if you realize this, but I'd say 95% of the people that we know collectively and share a circle with, like, are smoking pot. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Christy's smoking pot right now.
She's over there dropping dabs and trying to regrow a leg.
Right. She's grinding all over the couch, and I don't mean in the sexual way. Sorry, Phil. Most adults smoke pot, and then they vote the complete opposite of their personal behavior.
Right, and that's because of the negative connotations that come with it. And, you know, I'll say it. Like, I think there is a question is that, you know, as a member of, for me, the logic of it makes sense. Like, we should not be spending any money on this. This is something that is a total waste. It has made no, we haven't moved the needle whatsoever, and we have done we've only done the exact opposite of what the intentions were.
Right.
However, there is still the question of that in a civilized society where there are equal participants, and there is a, let's for instance say there is a 12-year-old kid and there's a parent who takes heroin, and that parent dies and overdoses on heroin. And now, granted, it could be because of the contaminant, or maybe they were getting stuff directly from Afghanistan that was so pure they couldn't stop themselves. Does any moral obligation exist upon a society to prevent such behavior, only before the youth? Is there a moral obligation that exists?
No. I mean, that's not how an individualistic society works. I mean, it's also a little bit of natural selection, and this is going to sound real bad, but we have too many humans on this planet, and we're doing too much as a society to help people live. Does that make me too Margaret Sanger? I mean, if you want to get really down to the biology of it...
Well, you're not picking specific people to weed out, so you should be okay.
No.
Since it's on a general scale.
I mean, it is one of those things where a parent who has... it's not the child's fault that they were born into an incredibly horrible situation, but a person who is... I'm not saying anything about James's kids because they seem like lovely children because I follow his girlfriend on Instagram.
Sliding in DMs constantly.
Oh, I'm trying to cuck him hard.
It's like,
Heather's beautiful. She's beautiful.
Half the time it's me on the account and I'm just stroking myself, dude. I'm just like, God damn, Chris. tell me more about them cats.
The biological reality is that we exist as human beings, okay? Let's just take the biological, physical aspect of it, not the spiritual part. The biological reality is that we exist to propagate the species and breed to create a better outcome in the next generation than the previous generation. And
social Darwinism.
But it's nature. That's the reality of it. I'm not crafting policies.
I'm not judging. I'm just saying right. That's what, you know, it would be called.
And so, you know, when you have I do believe that I would personally donate to charities that would help children. You know, I've been involved in a situation recently where trying to help place a home for a child born to a heroin addicted mother. But the reality is, as a government, as a society, we owe nothing to that child. As human beings, one-on-one, as empathetic creatures who see a helpless being in pain and in need, we will act. But as a collective, we owe nothing to each other. We only owe to each other what each individual is willing to give. And if I see Tanner in pain or in trouble, I want to help Tanner. But I don't have the right to take from James what James has earned to help Tanner, okay? I can persuade James that, listen, you're a human, Tanner's a human, this person is in trouble, let's help him. But we as a society owe nothing to anyone in the collective sense. We just don't. And the sooner that we start to recognize how reality works, how biology works, and how we as human beings need to empathize with other humans who are in trouble, be it Tiny or Tanner.
Formerly one-legged Tanner.
The more connected we are to individuals and their needs, the better our society will be. But when we disconnect it and make it collectivism, it robs us of our humanity, because then we create bureaucracies that don't help those children, that don't help Tanner. I don't know why Tanner has all of a sudden become a
because he's my son,
right?
And I'm a heroin addict that's on the verge of death,
right? Well, but we as a society owe nothing to anyone. We as human beings owe our existence to each other. We exist in this time to help each other. Let's be honest, 100 years from now, people will have heard of the name Donald Trump, but they're not going to give two fucking shits about Donald Trump.
No, it'll be like, you know, James Polk.
It's right. For us. Like, think about Benjamin Harrison. What the fuck do you know about Benjamin Harrison? You know nothing. Okay? And the amount of information that exists in the world means that future generations, we think, oh, it's so great, our ancestors will have this record. You don't even go back and look at unless you're interested in a guy or a girl and go back and stalk the shit out of their profile, nobody goes back and looks at anybody's past on Facebook. 100 years from now, when your ancestors don't know who the fuck you are, they're not going to go back and look. All that matters is the here and now and how we take care of each other individually. As a society, I have never once as an adult heard, God, you know what? DCS really helped my family. The Department of Children's Services came in and they really improved the lives of my family. You know, I got arrested for drugs. And I went through drug counseling, and you know what? They really helped my problem. You know what you hear in those stories is an individual came in, and they helped me get out of a situation where my son or daughter was being abused. I got arrested for drugs, and I went to drug counseling, and I met a human who helped me, a sponsor who helped me. That individual helped me. It's never, the government helped me get out of my situation. You know what the government does in every instance? They make it fucking worse.
They give you more drugs.
They give you more drugs. They warehouse you. They are systematically warehousing populations of people, undesirables. Who is Ehrlichman, Nixon, Cheney to systematically say, anybody who has black skin is less than and undesirable, and we need to outlaw them. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the collective. But it is if Dick Cheney had a black family that lived with him growing up, he probably wouldn't have the racist views that he had. You know, and so what do we as a society owe to the child of a heroin addicted mother? Nothing. We owe them nothing.
Does the collective chains we put on each other, but on an individual basis, on a humanity basis, you would argue that you feel an obligation towards that kid without government being involved, but on an individual level. 100%.
On an individual level, there are. We are using government to rob humanity of its humanity.
It outsources it.
It outsources humanity, and therefore nobody gets helped and more people get hurt. But on a one-on-one basis, we are all called to help each other as individuals. We are not called to donate more money to a government program on April 18th in 2017 to pay for more shit that's going to hurt more people and bomb more children. That we don't owe. I am not mandated to help anybody in this room, okay? And if I were forced to do it, the way that basic emotional trauma happens, each and every one of us, 98% of us are born codependent, okay? Each and every one of us are born through the birthing process, through the first few weeks of being alive as a human being. Certain things happen in your brain that cause emotional trauma that then leave you with issues, abandonment issues, that sets the template for unmet needs that you then spend unknowingly the rest of your life processing. And so each and every one of us, because of that process, are born and given empathy. And we, because we're social creatures, we are social animals, we want to desperately join a tribe, be a part of that tribe, and we fear being rejected from that tribe because it is part of our human nature. And so we are seeking validation through helping people a lot of times. And so our DNA, our very makeup, our very biology is set up to automatically help people when we see other animals in need. When we see,
and that extends behind us, animals don't like to see fellow animals in pain.
Exactly right. It's why we have the ASPCA. I love my cats. My cats are completely, in the grand scheme of biology, useless. Okay, these cats do nothing but walk around my house and shit in boxes. Okay, they are never going to breed because they have been fixed. They are a waste on humanity. They are.
I like how you wave your hand like this as you talk about your cat.
I did have kind of a Hitler lean.
They're
on
a waste of humanity. But, like, go on.
But, they are the reason for your place in society. Right. But, they are to blame.
But I love these cats. These cats are. I didn't go to the gym for an hour because I just laid in bed cuddling with muffins. Like, I love this fellow creature. Okay, and it's just something deep within us that when we see the child of an addicted heroin baby, we go, God, what can I do to help them? You know, and so it is in our very human existence. It is just from when we were Neanderthals. It's like why men are fear rejection. Okay, so women, so our ancestors, you had these packs of human creatures, okay, before maybe even human thought and consciousness had really developed. You had men and women in a collective group, and women needed the men and each other to protect them, because at that point, women, and let's just be honest, women are physically less strong than men.
Triggered.
Right. And so women in dating situations, more than anything else, fear being harmed. They fear physical or sexual violence. And it is bred from the very beginning. Men don't fear that. I have never been on a date with a woman and thought, I'm afraid for my life. Never has it entered my mind. Never have I been in a situation where I was afraid that I was going to be raped. Even when James Neese walked into my house and I was completely nude and he was sucking on his 44-ounce Mountain Dew or Suicide or whatever.
You had a loincloth on, to be honest.
I had nothing but a washcloth over my dick, and I was ready to fucking fight him. Because but rape never entered my mind. Okay? Men.
It wasn't erotic.
No. Men fear rejection because in that environment, when we were animals, before we were human beings, and I believe in evolution. I'm a Christian that believes in evolution. I believe there was a period where consciousness was given to human beings. But when we were animals and we were creatures, there. James is rubbing his head now. So we feared rejection because if a man was kicked out of the group because he was no longer valued in terms of sexual reproduction and he was cast out by the women, then that meant death. They were sent to their own little island and they were eaten by a mastodon. Okay, and so that's why men in dating situations fear being eaten by mastodons. Okay, they fear rejection. It's why they bait a faggot all over the place, and they're like, "Oh, I guess they're just in the friend zone then." You know, that's where that comes from.
This last 5 minutes, like a feminist would be fucking triggered as fuck.
Well, guess like... what? It's called science. It's called biology. It's called the evolution of the human species. Deal with it, okay?
And, now they'd be really fucking triggered.
Yeah. I'll mansplain the shit out of you, okay? I mean, this is just the reality of it, okay? There's Christians who are mad right now. I mean, it's...
Say they belong in the kitchen. Just finish it.
You're dangerously close to being eaten by a mastodon if you keep it the rate you're going right now.
I don't believe that. I believe that women are superior to men.
Finish it. Like you just finish her. That's all you got to do. Like you're at the apex.
I don't know what I'm saying that is offensive. I mean, it makes perfect sense in terms of biology. How are you offended, Christy? Shut up, Christy. Yeah. Get the fuck out of my house. Go listen.
Women are to be seen, not heard.
I'm dead serious right now. Go turn on my oven, please. I'm not even kidding. I need to reheat that sweet potato. You can put it in the oven if you want to be a deer. Chop, chop. So I just look at this and I go, okay, we're pack creatures. We're biologically designed to react a certain way to other fellow animals. So when you ask me, does society owe... Drugs is a very prolific issue because it's like why we love sugar, salt, and fat. It's just the parts of our brain. It's storing those biological processes. It makes us go, all right, we don't have to hunt and gather for a couple days because we just had an almond joy. Like, drugs hit all those good parts of our brain that trigger all the good biology. And so it becomes a massive issue.
Well, is there a human need for that sort of enhanced experience?
I mean, when you're in the Libertarian Party, fuck yes.
Well, I mean, I think that they're, you know...
Why haven't you turned the oven on?
I think that, you know, a lot of cultures have used drugs to engage the spiritual experience, you know, like the Native Americans with peyote.
Right.
And I think that you could probably make a pretty fair case that is, you know, man's quest has always been for higher meaning.
Right.
Since the beginning of time. And so I think you could probably make a pretty fair case that part of a human need is that enhanced experience or that out of body or that... you know, healing vibe, spirituality that seems to be so common. And I'm not saying that has necessarily anything to do with regulating drug use because, you know, for me, I see it as it's clear. It's simple. The facts are the facts. It's been a waste of money. It hasn't been effective. And we've done more harm than good.
Yep.
It's been worse for human freedom than better.
And there's only 20 methamphetamine deaths in Honolulu this year or last year. So, like, technically, crystal meth is safer than driving your car.
Right. Absolutely.
Actually, it's one of those safest drugs. It's funny. Like,
that could be a sampling error because it's such a small...
It's Honolulu.
Well, and it's...
I don't know where you got that fact from. That was just random...
There's a huge ice problem in Hawaii, like, compared to other states.
That's where Dog the Bounty Hunter is at. They don't have ice there. And if they do, he's like...
Yeah.
He gets their ice, and he's like, "You want a cigarette, bruh?" Mm-hmm. And then they take the cigarette, and he arrests them for the ice.
His wife has, like, some ridiculously huge tits, right? Like, just beyond capacity. It's like, yeah. How the fuck did you grow them that big? Like, there's radiation?
I think
radiation.
When they film the show, they probably have to be about 200 feet.
Yeah, I mean, she takes them down, too, because, like, she chases after, like, criminals, because you don't see those things, like, boom, boom, like, nailing everywhere. Like, I'm watching her chase after them, like, holy shit. Like, these things are, like, the size of fucking cars, you know? Like,
oh, definitely. At least many.
And he's like, Best Buy, like, you can go around the back and get the criminal. And she's like, running back there. He's like, come on, bro, what are you running from? Us? You gotta pay your bail, man, brother. But no, like, Honolulu, like, Hawaii's got a huge meth problem.
Jape's niece reenacts Dog the Bounty Hunter. How did we even get here?
But no, like,
I literally can't even.
We were just talking about those tits, dude. They're huge. But, like, Hawaii's got a huge
titties.
Meth problem.
T-I-D-D-I-E-S.
But meth's pretty safe.
Well, I mean,
meth's not safe.
There's no meth there after Dog gets the people. But, like, I mean, but for real, though, that bitch has got to have, like, some spine issues with how much it weighs her down, you know?
They're fucking ridiculous. Like, I don't even know. Like when we tested nuclear bombs off of, like, Bikini Atoll, did, like, the backdraft flying hit her as, like, when she was a fetus or some shit? It caused, like, some mutant reaction that caused her tits to be fucking car-sized. Like I've seen some huge tits on the internet. You know what I mean? I fucking Googled, like, some Chelsea Charm shit where those things are, like, fucking fun bags, like some fucking beanbag tit. But those are, like, full-blown, like, natural Hawaiian titties that Dog's...
I wonder what Alex Jones thinks about her tits.
Can you imagine Dog beating it up with that fucking mullet, dude?
With the sunglasses on.
Like, mullet's just fucking flying. He's just diving off those things. Like,
right? Oh, my God.
They could use Beth as one of those, like, safe pads for whenever they shoot movies and they jump off of the building. Because they are huge. They're like
she's
a
got
bouncy
a mullet too,
house.
Right? Like, huh? I remember she's got a mullet too. She's got that little female mullet going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, that
it's unreal.
The family's so trash. I love it. Like their family business is just chasing people through Hawaii. They're smoking meth to put them back in jail. Like, I know there's ice in there. It's like, there might be, dude. Like their whole family business is chasing down meth addicts. Like,
yeah.
How fucking bored do you got to be that it's just like, one day you decided, out of all the shit I could open with this bank loan, right? Like, restaurants and, like, copy machine repairmen or, like, delivery service. Like, you know what I'm going to do for my life? My family, I'm going to teach my kids how to hunt down fucking tweakers. Like, you know, does he just drive around, like, you know, Honolulu, right? And he's like, you see that boy? And, like, his son's probably, like, 12 years old. He gives him, like, a sidearm and stuff. Like, you see that boy? There's 15 different speakers in that house. And it's a fucking tweaker, dude. Like, there ain't no way he owns that many speakers. Those things are fucking stolen. You know, so...
Yeah,
I don't want to arrest them.
Dog has to have cameras all around Honolulu just to see how many times each person's blinds move a day. And he just raises it. But he always brags about how he doesn't use a gun. But then he beats the fuck out of him and shoots him with pepper spray every single time. So, I mean, I can't say I agree with his tactics. But, I mean, how about whenever they, like, ripped him for being racist? Do you remember when that happened?
I mean, he has to
start the oven.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty trashy, though. Like, you can't be that trashy and not be racist. You know what I mean? It's like,
it's, oh, yeah.
I mean, he's chasing meth dealers. He's got his wife with this huge... He's got, like, his sons all up in it. You know what I mean? His sons are, like, riding around. And he's like, Lele, get him, go get him. You know? It's like...
But what made him so pissed off about it was his daughter was dating a black guy, wasn't it?
My daughter's coal burning, you fuck off.
Oh,
that's what he said.
God. Like, it was terrible. It was like, I thought he was just joking whenever I first heard it, but it was like some pretty intense stuff.
He had some strong feelings about
it.
Like, he was really offended because he got called racist and he used his daughter as a prop for 45 minutes that because she's fucking this black dude, that therefore he can't be racist. I was like, oh my God. That's like I said, exemplary Honolulu trash, and that's what makes it great. Like, My daughter has been steady.
Just think, you
news.
Wouldn't have, if we didn't have the drug war, you'd never have this to enjoy.
Oh, we still have it. He'd probably just be like a junkyard owner.
What the fuck? I love
you want
the drug
of the junkyard
war now.
Dog?
Right? So, I mean, you take, but that's not nearly going to be as much fun.
Let me just chase him up that. But it's like, yes, I looked up the statistics. Only 3 people died in 96. Like
somehow we just made the case for the drug war so that you can enjoy him chasing tweakers and his wife's extremely large breasts. And the thought of losing that hits us all so to the core that there's no way we'd give up the war on drugs.
Is
there anything that I need to edit out? I wasn't...
Coal burner. You're going to need to take that out.
Like they're huge, but they're not attractive huge. They're like, right? They're right. Like rubber balloons. Or
I
like,
mean, I'm a Republican now. I love the drug war.
This has been totally counterproductive. We should have never gone off on this tangent. Because now the thought of losing Dog the Bounty Hunter with the not having the drug war is more than Tanner can handle. So
yeah.
He's a new Ronald Reaganite.
Yeah, I mean, government is the problem.
We found the new Chris Peffers, everybody.
Oh, but even better.
Even better.
The drug war is hard. I mean, it isn't hard. It's easy. But selling it's hard. Selling it's the hardest part about defeating, you know, ending the drug war. The hardest thing in the world is, one, the people that are going out there, we talked about this a little bit in chat, that are going out there making the case aren't exactly the people you want out there making the case. You know, the very fact...
I don't know. I feel very effective messaging from James Neese. I'm pro-heroin now.
Pro-meth. Only 7 people died in 98.
I mean, Hitler used it. Didn't Hitler, invent...
Cocaine. You could die from
invent
salt.
No, he didn't invent it.
I thought that was George Washington.
What kind of argument for meth is, Hitler used it?
Well, cause
I mean, he's, like, making super troopers damn near. They can stay up for, like, 4 weeks at a time and not ever get tired. Like, everybody wants those soldiers.
Like, this is great, because Chris was just talking, like, 10 minutes ago about, like, no one remembers Benjamin Harrison, no one remembers Polk. Everybody remembers fucking Hitler, right?
Yeah.
Drugs,
that's a good point.
Drugs make you unforgettable.
Greg, help.
I don't know what to say. I mean...
Are you ever going to forget Hitler? Like, last day on Earth, like, the first thing that's going to go to your mind is, like, my kids are going to know about Hitler.
Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, absolutely.
Well, I'm even...
It's his birthday, after all. Like,
it's his birthday. And someone we should all go around the room and say something nice about him.
Yeah.
I like how he was committed to the very end.
It's Columbine Day also.
He overcame Parkinson's with bravery.
It's Columbine Day. That happened on April 20th, too.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you missed... This was like the greatest day on poll I've ever seen. It was incredible the amount of offensive material in one place at one time on the internet. I mean everything was either celebrate Hitler's birthday or did these, you know, or
were these good kids?
Yeah, were these good kids? their yearbook photos. What did they actually do wrong?
Right. I did see someone post the World War I photo of Hitler. Said, "I bet this World War I veteran won't get a like." And I kecked, bro.
Well, you know, libertarians actually should like Hitler. He actually lived stateless for 7 years before the Third Reich.
He was not a citizen
of any country.
He was a sovereign citizen.
He was a sovereign citizen, the OG sovereign male.
He's a war hero.
Yeah, I mean, he fought for the Austrian army, and so he couldn't have German citizenship under the Second Reich.
Well, this is something else.
He was anti-Israel to the very end. Anti-Israel.
Is that a positive thing for you?
I mean, I don't like to spend billions of dollars there. Who does? That's libertarian as fuck. What are you talking about?
All right, okay. I'm down with that. I didn't. There was a hint of anti-Semitism is why I wanted you to clarify a little bit.
We are... Everybody's a little anti-Semitic. Come on.
What is this?
Every time you celebrate Christmas, you're being an anti-Semitic.
What's that puppet play? Everybody's a little bit racist.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Are you telling me, all right? Talking about anti-Semitism, if you go through a Jewish community and you see...
just stop, okay? Let's just end right there. I don't know what happened.
And there's a quarter on the ground.
No, stop.
Never go full Richard Spencer.
Yes. This is not an alt-right cast. We're a libertarian podcast. We're going to stop you
right
there.
Except for that one guy that comments that's all mad. Like, who is the neckbeard? He's probably listening to this right now. Like,
Nathan Olm something.
I'm not listening to you guys anymore because Greg egg isn't a libertarian, right? Like another one. Yeah, fuck you. We're celebrating Hitler's birthday. How libertarian is that?
We're making Hitler libertarian again.
I don't think that's possible. I mean,
as sovereign,
he seized all the means of production.
Seven stateless years.
He killed more commies than anybody else I know. I mean, high score.
I mean, that may be his one accomplishment. Like, seriously.
He literally,
all jokes
are we
aside,
really acres. Praising Hitler? Are you guys really serious,
I mean,
with this right now?
Just acres the and fact acres that he killed communists. The most commies, that's the only thing he...
No, Stalin killed more commies, to be honest.
But he
well, I mean, it's a good thing that there's no communists. Like, one less communist is definitely better for the world.
Well, they're not people.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if we're judging how much, if you're saying that communists are not moral agents because they don't respect, like, you know, rights of, like, life, liberty, and property, then therefore they're not people, if you're not saying that. And that means Hitler did a good thing by killing a bunch of communists because he increased liberty. If he didn't kill those communists, you know what? You would be the Soviet Union.
All right, Greg, let's wrap up on the... Just turned his
damn
mic on.
Full circle. Drug war bad.
Right.
Drug war bad.
Killing communists good.
And it's the right
heroin good
to want to help. Like, you know, a moral obligation doesn't necessarily exist, but as social creatures, there is a human need to not see suffering. And so, right. You know, the problem is we've removed the feeling of obligation by creating government to absolve us to, like, go and do it ourselves.
Right.
You know, and that's the real dangerous thing about government is that it alienates man from his fellow man.
Yeah.
Whereas, to quote a communist, Karl Marx, it was that man was alienated from his fellow man from capitalism.
He got alienated from his life. There we go.
There you go. And so, you know, but the reality is government alienates us from each other because it creates a fake guarantee.
Yeah.
And so it absolves us of guilt.
It's the myth that government will take care of us. Government will help us. You know, if we regulate the supplement industry, then we won't have all these bad supplements.
Right. And
meanwhile,
now,
you'll end up with one company that will rebrand in multiple different... I mean, it's because they bought off enough politicians.
Right. And, you know, look, that's the thing is we're at a tipping point where the war on drugs is essentially over. I mean, right. It's not okay to come out and say it yet that you're like, yeah, I smoke pot all the time and I'm a surgeon, you right. know, or I'm a stockbroker, whatever. But, you know,
I'm a Cricket wireless salesman.
I think Hitler did a good thing.
I mean, hey, one good thing. That is it.
The other stuff was bad.
I think his libertarianness is not talked about enough.
I mean, I think they did kind of violate the NAP because... I don't think that the state.
Kinda.
I don't think the state should be involved in killing anybody.
But if he had done it as a private militia, no problem at all.
Well, he would have had a private court and hopefully a private jury that would have acquitted him.
Right.
But that's the free market, and that's why I love the
you
free
literally
market.
Just made the Somalia argument for every status we've ever argued
pretty
against.
Pretty much.
You literally just did it for them.
All this work and undermined in a single...
5 years, wrap it up.
Yep. All, one Tanner birthday, one birthday, one go, you know, go around to say something nice, and the libertarian movement was just had the air sucked out from it.
Just ended with Tanner Perdue.
Oh, God.
Tanner comes on the podcast and ruins libertarianism.
Well, you know, like, man, if private courts and all.
You just, you know, kill all those communists.
I couldn't be more proud of you, son.
Well, I mean, I'm, people are all talking about their recreational weed and my Second Amendment is not going to be valid until they let me have my recreational nukes. Like, how can they say that we're not in a police state if I can't go out on my property and set off a nuclear bomb?
Fair and, point.
Like, check this out. The other day, my neighbor was mowing their grass.
Should have nuked him.
Oh, just wait. Well, see, they were mowing on, like, right at the edge, not at my property, but on the line. And you know how the mower flips out some of the grass?
He shot it on your side.
Oh. Three blades of grass from that lawnmower came onto my property.
That's trespassing.
That violates the NAP.
Yeah, and it's littering, really.
Instead of risking violating another NAP, like if I launched a recreational nuke into their driveway...
You need to stop the NAPs.
It may have... went into somebody else's yard.
That's true. Containment's the real issue with recreational nukes.
But good.
Tactical nukes are what we really need.
Well, what I did was I had some mercenaries at my house.
Okay.
And I just sent over a private squad of mercenaries to kill them and their family.
How, though, is that allowed for them to get onto his property? Shouldn't you have waited because for him to come on yours?
He violated my nap by putting those three blades of grass in my yard.
So you were able to pull like an Islamabad Osama bin Laden raid with mercenaries because of three blades of grass?
Yeah, I'm not hurting anybody else.
That's true.
I mean, he violated my nap, so I should be able to nuke him. But since nuking him would cause people who haven't violated
fallout,
my
nuclear
nap,
fallout.
Yeah, pretty much. That's when you hire the mercenaries.
That's the alternative.
Yes, because then they can just run and storm the gates.
Discount double tap.
Get rid of the family, and then your nap is safe.
Could you have bartered for his like wife and children for like mixed slaves, maybe?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, like then like you could fuck his wife, right? Then sell the child on the black market for organ harvesting.
Or if you need help in a garden, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the free market. That's why you should have to set up a wall on your property in case you accidentally do that trespassing crime of kicking a few blades of grass into the other property.
It's a moral atrocity, really.
Yeah, it's sickening.
I'll buy slaves off you for my methamphetamine mines if you got any of those left over.
No.
We have literally made the case as to why I am not an anarchist in the last 10 minutes. So Tanner and James just made the case why I believe there should be a little bit of force, a little bit of state.
A little bit of rationality.
Meth mines, nuking neighbors over grass.
Blades
well,
of grass.
I mean, I'm like Hank Hill over my grass, and their grass is dead, and they just...
And you don't want it mixing with your live grass.
Exactly. It would look like... It would look
dirty
green
mixers.
And yellow.
You bring your fucking crabgrass over to my neighborhood, boy.
Yeah.
We don't like your kind.
Would Hank Hill be the ideal libertarian?
Dale Gribble would be.
Dale Gribble?
Yeah.
Well, he's more like an ANCAP, you know, but I mean, for a traditional
Hank Hill's a Republican because he said, America hasn't had any real pride since 1992 when George Bush went to Japan and vomited on the auto executives.
What other great statements did Hank Hill have? What words of wisdom has Hank Hill given us?
Oh, I mean,
that boy ain't right, Peggy. I swear.
Huh?
That boy ain't right.
I'll tell you what.
He ain't my boy might not be much, but he's all I got.
I mean, Hank Hill really is a good political figure because we all liked George Bush until, I mean, we found out who he was. Hank Hill just got to shake his hand first. And found out he had the limp handshake.
I think Bill would be like the archetype for what the Libertarian Party currently is.
Bill Dautrey is Bobby Hill's dad.
Yeah, Bill Delafontaine de Dautrey. I'm from Houma, Louisiana.
But think about it. Hank Hill could not have kids because he has a narrow urethra. Mm. And Bobby looks exactly like Bill Dautrey. And Bill Dautrey is in love with Peggy. So
cucking on Rainy Street.
Yes, Hank Hill is a cuck.
Like when these two start talking, Greg and I are just sitting back and letting it go.
I mean, really, that's what it is. Because you cannot tell me that's not Bill Dautrey's son. Hank played running back in high school, set high school records. Bobby tried to do... women's cheerleading.
This passionate of a debate about anything in months.
I want to see him on Maury. Because I would bet the house that Bobby's
that was a lie.
Is, yes. And then Hank would be like, you stupid bitch, baby, I swear to God, you fucking slut.
I'm no cuck.
I'm a cuck.
God damn it, Bobby.
Well, he does have a cuck-ass job. It's propane, right? Like, who sells fucking propane?
Are you saying all propane salesmen are cucks?
Well, if you think about it. Like, his boss, right? His boss, Strickland, like Mr. Strickland. All he does is spend like all the profits on whores, gambling,
and coke.
Like, I'm having a heart contraction, like anything. And he listens to that boss no matter fucking what. Like, this boss is a detriment to him. Like, hey, Hank, like, I'm going down to, like, you know, the Jiggle Hut. You know, if my wife comes by, make sure you tell her I'm working hard. Or, hey, Hank, can you sign this thing and say that it absolves me all crimes? And, you know, he's basically doing insurance fraud and everything else. So, like, and Hank just willingly goes with
it. Yeah, Hank's his bitch because he's always like, hey, old top, how about you suck my dick?
He might even, all because he wants to be manager. He's been assistant manager for like 10 years, right? Assistant manager for 10 to 15 years. There's no other manager there. There's no manager at Strickland. Like, there's the owner.
Yeah.
He's like CEO. I mean, he's an assistant manager at a facility that doesn't have a manager. That's cuck behavior. Like, how are you not a manager, dude?
And, I mean, if that doesn't give it away, I mean, if Honestly, Bill Dautry's fucking your wife, I mean... You gotta narrow your ether, bro. You ain't having kids.
You just called Tanner a cuck because he's not a manager at a place where he's the only employee.
Well, technically, he's a manager, right?
I'm not a manager.
That's cuck.
Aren't you the only employee?
Yeah, I'm the only employee.
So you're a cuck.
How? I'm the only employee.
But you're not the manager. That's cuck behavior,
I'm like
right, James?
I'm the CEO of that store.
Did they even hire you, or are you just showing stand there all day? Did you get hired? You can't be the only employee. You're like, all right, this makes... You're the only employee. No one comes in. Like, is this even a business, or did you just walk in there one day and start flipping phones there, just laying
on
the stock?
Well, actually, whenever I got back from the inauguration, I went to the Cricket store and bought a phone, and my former manager was like, "Do you want a job here?" And I was like, "I guess so." That's how I joined the team.
Like, no W forms.
Then you cucked him, and he's gone.
I cucked them and stole their store.
You do the cucking.
Yeah.
I am the cuckmaster.
Cuckmaster.
You know Hank Hill.
I'm the one who cucks.
No small urethra on Tanner Purdue.
No,
sir. I'm proud of my son. He's no cuck. I won't allow you to be talked about like that in my presence.
Oh, I mean.
You do the cucking.
Dude, exactly.
That's in cap as fuck. You stole a store, dude.
Yeah. You literally walked in there and took it over.
In like 2 months, I had that store taken over.
Because somebody left.
I mean, because of
he
capitalism.
He's too alpha.
It's capitalism in the free market.
Do you have the keys to open and lock?
Circle?
Hell yeah.
Do you have the security codes?
I have the keys to the vault or the password. It's like a big
Don't
ass
tell
safe.
It out.
No, I'm not.
That
I,
was
I couldn't
next
do that. I couldn't do that. But yeah, I could open the safe and stuff.
That was literally where I was heading next, right, Greg. You son of a bitch.
I know.
Let me get this straight. This for all the audience members listening right now. You're the only person that works in the store. You have the keys and you know the password of the safe, right?
Wait, what?
Oh, that's great. No, just curious. Like, you know, just.
I mean, like, if I did anything, they would think it was me, obviously.
It'd be hard to pin it on anybody else except Jesse Rowe.
All right, so you have the keys to the vault. You have the keys to the store.
But
you're the only employee, but you're not the manager.
I mean, honestly, I have not even been to work since everybody quit, because everybody left the other day, and I haven't been
back.
Did
they all quit yesterday? Because you were at work yesterday.
I was at work yesterday, and I left early, and then they fired my boss, because, like, the GM was in. He fired my boss, and then I left a little bit later, and then I hear this other chick quit, so I was like, damn, I guess it's just me. So, I am Cricket now. And, I mean, at Cricket, we definitely do go the extra mile for our customer. Which is Jesse Riddle. That's the only customer we have. But honestly,
you'd prefer you didn't have Jesse Riddle as a customer, because his demands are going to be fucking unending.
He was surprisingly easy to get along with. I mean, just for the fact that he had a
copious amount of weed.
Like that weird ass SIM card thing, the weird phone. I've never seen anything like that.
I have a feeling China. That Newcastle is like an interesting place. It's like that Sunnyvale trailer park and the Trailer Park Boys almost. Like, there's just weird shit that happens in Newcastle.
Yeah. Newcastle's definitely a weird place. You'll see every different kind of person around in one day. Like, you'll see anybody from, like, having a suit and tie to somebody like today. I got stuck driving behind this guy on a moped. He was probably about 60 years old, and on the back it said, "A country boy can survive."
And I was a DUI.
I was following him for about 20 minutes before I could pass him. But you'll see all kinds of people. But I probably wouldn't raise my kids there. No,
you just got like the world's biggest like breakfast extravaganza. Right? We're there, Greg. And there's like thousands.
We don't have
of people.
Enough breakfast.
There's thousands of people come to breakfast.
Stacks.
Oh, you guys went on a Sunday.
Yeah.
It's because we have like 500 churches. So like everybody gets out at once and like, I want me some biscuits and gravy. It's like after you praise the Lord, he definitely treats you to some biscuits and gravy.
That's true.
And like Jeremiah knows everybody in that town. It's like some like Wakefield stuff going on there. So it's like everybody knows Jeremiah.
Well, the owner comes out to greet his table.
Yeah, like
kiss the ring.
It's some like North Korea shit. Like he walks in, right? And like we're all hungover. Jeremiah's still drunk. We sit down. Owner comes over. He's like, "Hey, what's up, Jeremiah?" Bang, bang. Who are these guys? "Oh, we'll give you the good stuff." I'm like, "Do you, that's why that conspiracy theory I said earlier, I believe that Jeremiah is a tyrant in Henry County."
Well, I mean, I was at a restaurant one time. I believe it was Steak and Shake, and I was facing away from the door, and I just heard Vince McMahon's theme song from the WWF. And I turn around and it's Jeremiah in a white jacket. And he's like strutting like Vince McMahon. And
the stiff legged strut.
Yeah. And he just walked around the counter and just grabbed all the hamburgers. Like, he wasn't.
Had you had any of
He wasn't paying for shit.
The marijuana?
No. No.
So it was sober when you experienced his entrance music?
Yeah. Yeah.
Donald Trump by chance, you know, clothesline him and knock him to the ground?
When Jeremiah walks by, you do hear Vince McMahon's music in Newcastle.
He has theme music.
I mean, like, if you're a citizen and he's just at the store or whatever, you pull it out and you play it on your phone if there's no...
Are you allowed to look him in the eye?
I mean, I wouldn't do it.
Has Jeremiah ever fed anybody to the dogs?
No, I'm not even going to answer that. But, yeah.
Lisa's dying.
But, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. We gotta
wrap this up.
Yeah, I'm not saying there should be a congressional inquiry on, like, the happenings in Newcastle, Indiana, but, you know, CIA people, I know you're listening to this, and, like, I'm not saying there's a lot of evidence for, you know, a banana republic in, you know, the 765 area. Is it 765?
765, yeah.
765. It's an area code. Bloodless, merciless, full of parks and park recreations.
It's a fiefdom. Right?
A fiefdom of, like, destruction?
He's the Pablo Escobar of Eastern Indiana.
Absolutely.
I would almost say Genghis Khan.
His seed has been spread all over.
Exactly.
That could cause some issues.
75% of the children born in the next 50 years will have his seed in them. His DNA.
Oh, my God. This is just so
conceived in Vegas.
Final thoughts for this episode, James Neese.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, like, what do we do? We went over statistics for methamphetamine. I'm pro that, pro heroin. We went over like Jeremiah is a hidden tyrant of his county that he needs to be deposed quickly before he becomes out of an issue.
Hank Hill is a cuck.
Yeah, Hill is a cuck.
Oh yeah,
with a small urethra. Yeah.
We definitely went over how Dog the Bounty Hunter is the thing that really keeps the drug war pumping. Without quality entertainment on the Friday afternoon, you really have no reason to really fight the drugs. His wife's got huge tits. I want people to understand that as well. Like if. He's got a fucking mullet and he pounds that. You know, it's like...
My stomach hurts from laughing.
I mean, there's just so many things today that like, if you really like link them together in like some Illuminati type of like conspiracy map, it all makes sense. Dog the Bounty Hunter has a mullet. He hunts down meth users, which meth is the safest drug, but we legalize pot, which is also safe. Almost all the drugs are safe, but if we legalize drugs, then... Jeremiah, who's now gone crazy mad with power, smoking cigarettes, doing whatever he does.
Allegedly.
At his parties. Yeah. If we legalize it all, Jeremiah will lose power over Henry County, right? If Dog the Bounty Hunter is not busting those meth addicts and making the demand go up, Jeremiah will lose power in Henry County, and who
it's
will take
connected.
His place? Who will take his place? Who's behind Jeremiah?
Do we really want Henry County unruled?
Do we want Riddle to take place? A Jason Sipe clone? He's an easy. I mean, there's like, I mean, just put the pieces together. Some Illuminati shit's happening in Indiana. Newcastle's a weird town. Like, you know, there's some Amish people out there. I notice them sometimes.
Yeah,
I watch them.
Are Amish.
I don't trust them, you know, so.
Yeah.
Blueberries.
I trust the Amish. I can't see them, like, taking my wallet or.
I went to their house to get my dog before, and I shit you not, they had butter sitting out on the table. Like, it's been sitting there for, like, a day or two. That's some weird shit. Put it in their fridge like a normal human. But, oh, they don't got a fridge. It's a fucking ice box, you know?
Yeah, they could use an ice box if they wanted to keep their butter in it. But everyone knows that butter has more flavor when it's warm.
That's not.
Obviously.
But there's like flies on it.
Only cucks eat cold butter.
It's melted on the table, like it's melting, and they got an ice
actually,
box.
Actually, butter doesn't melt it.
It melts for them. Like it's weird, can shit there. If you've been out that far, like I know you live there, but you go to that place where the Amish people are, right? And you turn in there, and they got like thousands of dogs.
Walmart.
They're melted.
They're
butter.
Always at Walmart.
And they're fucking Chrysler minivans.
Yeah.
Those are Mennonites.
It's like the libertarians that are always like, you're not libertarian enough. I wonder if there's something in the Amish community where, like, if you go to Walmart to buy Tupperware, people are like, oh, and you call yourself Amish.
Oh, yeah, impure. Yeah. You're not pure. You're not really Amish.
You're an AI.
Statist.
An Amish in name only.
Oh, yeah, an AMO.
AMO pizza.
Like, I saw them getting gas the other day. They were eating frozen pizzas from the gas station. I was like, man, Amish doesn't sound that bad, you know?
Frozen pizza, yeah. Man.
If we are to liken this to like pre-war Iraq, is the way the Amish are to Jeremiah or the way that the Kurds are to Saddam?
The Amish are our ally against Jeremiah Morrill.
Hey, if you think about it, that's the only true threat to his power. They're all over the place in rural, like Henry County.
He keeps them at bay.
Yeah.
With the iron fist, he keeps the Amish from getting too unruly.
His greatest fear is in the middle of the night, he hears the roar of 1,000 Chrysler minivans roll up.
hurling blueberries at his home on Jeffrey Street.
Just throwing wooden rockers all over the place.
Releasing their shelties to come. Yeah.
Sticking their pitchforks in his front yard.
Yeah. If you think about this, it's the only true threat to his power. If we arm the Amish... Arm the Amish, like, just bear with me. We could probably overthrow him.
Well, I honestly think he was thinking about joining the Amish, because remember when he grew out that mustache and pretended to be Ken Bone? Maybe he was actually trying to grow out some Amish
that
fur.
Was just a cover to see if he could feel out the Mennonite population.
Exactly.
If they accept him.
See, we just don't know.
A lot of things we need to know about Lion Jer. Needs a proper vetting.
Yeah.
Needs a proper vetting. Well, I think we should wrap up.
Go ahead, Greg. Your final thoughts.
We'll let
for the
Tanner
episode.
Go, and then I'll go.
All right, Tanner, your final thoughts for this episode.
I mean, it was pretty cool. I guess, like, I'll come again for sure if I'm invited.
You're definitely invited.
Oh yeah.
My sons have the perpetual invitation.
Yeah. We'll see. Go to the Facebook page or send us an email. Comment on what you think of Tanner. We'll leave it up to the audience.
Heart reacts only.
If people want more Tanner, then they got to tell us. They got to get in the Facebook group and let us know what you think of young Tanner.
That sounds like a good plan. Heart reacts only.
Other thoughts?
I mean, I thought it was really nice, but like, I know a few things went overboard, but you expect that, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't think James is really a Hitler supporter as much as he seems, but, I mean, you know, it is what it is. As long as you're not violating the nap.
Like Hitler.
I mean, they violated his nap, too. They did.
The United States and the Russians, we bullied him.
We killed him. I'm totally against the death penalty.
even for Hitler?
I mean, I'm sorry for believing that the same rights belong to everyone.
Did you just right shame me?
Your virtues would be hard.
Why did I mean? Why would Hitler not have the same rights as anybody else? I mean, I'm glad he's dead. Well, let me rephrase that. I'm glad I'm not around while he's around.
Are you Jewish?
Am I Jewish?
Huh?
No.
You've been fine. You're blue-eyed, blonde-haired.
Yeah. I'm 5'11". I'm Gold. Literally the Aryan race, according to Hitler. I mean, me and him aren't tied or anything. But, no, I hate him. Like, this, I need to just quit while I'm ahead.
You're killing that.
No, keep going.
This is fantastic.
I mean...
You're not besties.
I'm the Aryan race, according to Hitler.
So you're doing fine. You have nothing to worry about.
I mean, if I would have been alive back then, I would not have been scared.
Right. Your nap would not have been violated.
I would have gotten unlimited soup rations. I would have gotten a king suite instead of the Anne Frank, you know. Hitler would have scratched my back in the day, I feel like.
But I'm proud of you.
I still can't get behind him.
100%, you're not behind him.
No.
Good.
Even
get
after
that
all
on
that,
the record.
Even after all that free soup.
I mean, I think it was John Wayne that said he said something about how one of his friends who was an actress had a bunch of dumb thoughts, but he would die to protect the right for her to talk about it. So, I mean...
Was that a direct quote?
He's paraphrasing.
Yeah, okay. Extremely paraphrased. But, I mean, yeah, I'm not a Hitler fan. I probably wouldn't buy a t-shirt or a jersey.
Make that a meme.
A jersey.
I want a meme of that immediately.
Yeah.
I want a Hitler jersey.
I don't want
a
you
Hitler
don't want
jersey. Well, there might be a pretty badass hockey one, to be honest. But other than that, no, I'm not a Hitler supporter. All I was trying to say was that they violated his nap. Because I don't believe the state should be involved in killing
you. And you think that's wrong. It's a fair, valid point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on.
No problem.
I'm so glad you came.
I can't wait to come back.
All right. What's going to happen?
Greg?
I don't even know where to begin.
Should we even put this out?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm a little worried in parts, but only
me
kind
too.
Of.
Oh, you're fucked, Tanner.
Yeah.
here's the problem. Being a good entertainer means you're fucked at Cricket Wireless.
Oh.
But they'll be fine.
He's the only
fine.
Person there. They,
trust me, yeah.
No
who's he going to ever have to... Who's going to lecture him himself?
The chances of anyone at Cricket Wireless
listen
ever hearing of this is nil. But I'll tell you what. Help young Tanner out. If you need a phone, go to Newcastle. Tanner will hook you up.
Yeah, I hook it up fat.
Good. But yeah, 420 episode. Wow.
It was everything I thought it was. It was exactly as I promoted it.
It is. Drug war bad. Drugs bad.
Whoa. Heroin good.
Heroin, as long as, you know, it's only bad because the government's making it bad.
Right. Opium, fine.
Yeah.
Amphetamines don't even kill people. Meth doesn't even kill people.
The only positives of the drug war, Dog the Bounty Hunter and his wife's enormous breasts.
Yeah, I mean, I love the drug war after tonight.
if it's going to give us massive titties, then let's be for it, right?
If this is your first time listening to this show...
that's pretty much it.
This isn't the norm, but...
No, it is. It's pretty much becoming the norm.
Not all the time.
No, pretty much all the time now. You get a lot of information, but you also get... Dog the Bounty Hunter's titties and Hank Hill's a cuck.
You will not find another libertarian podcast more committed to the non-aggression principle than worrying about Hitler's being violated.
That's right.
And you now that's wrong.
I mean, how can you argue that? Like, everybody's guaranteed to their life, you know?
Except the Jews.
I mean, he took 6 million lives, but like, I believe in Sargon's teaching. An eye for an eye will make the whole world blind.
Very good.
It was actually Jesus, but...
You say Saruman? Like
Sargon.
I thought you were the Lord of the Rings wizard. I'm like,
no.
I don't
the
watch
Mesopotamian
that gay
God.
Shit.
Who is Sargon?
The Mesopotamian God. Sargon of Akkad.
Oh,
right?
How the fuck did he know that and I didn't?
He's my son.
Oh, that's right. He's full autism.
Raised him well.
Autism runs in the family. Yeah.
Marduk and all those Mesopotamian gods.
All right. If any other thoughts, Greg?
Wow. Jeremiah Morrill may not love this episode, so Lion Jer.
We apologize.
The gig's up. You've been exposed by James Neese and his Illuminati weavings.
It started with him smoking a cigar, and we were worried about that. And it ended with him killing Jews. I don't know.
Not Jeremiah Morrill.
Oh, okay.
No.
I get him and Hitler confused after.
He's a Mennonite sympathizer, though.
Okay.
At least I didn't get him confused with Hitler.
All right. Well, there we go. So I'll just hand it off to you. Thanks, Neese. Thanks, Christy Avery. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Christy, for driving down.
I don't know how you made it through this, but wow.
It's everything you hoped it would be, wasn't it? It's even better. Yeah, she got her money's worth. I had some long-winded...
Social Darwinism.
A lot of sexism.
I stand by all of that.
Just please don't unlike the page.
If you didn't like this, unlike the page, I don't need you.
I don't need you like a woman, right?
I need my people. I don't need those people. I think if you're a woman, a man, and you heard my rant and you don't agree with me, then I don't need you either. I argue with me, fine.
Their thoughts.
I mean, but you know, it's this is the evolutionary history. I'm giving you the facts, and you can like the facts or you cannot. I can't help you.
The documents.
Can't argue with the documents.
But yeah. I had a long-winded, I had a thoughtful moment about humanity this morning, and had this touching moment in the car driving to work, and I was like, you know, this was really a great moment, and I learned a lot listening to this song, thinking about life. I'm going to share this on the podcast as my final thought. Not going to do that. Not going to happen. It doesn't deserve to be in this episode. So we'll do that a different time. But thank you so much for listening to this episode of Weird Libertarians. Thank you, Tanner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for
my pleasure.
Driving from Newcastle. Thank you to Christy for driving from Fort Wayne.
James for thank unexpectedly you coming. For, we needed you, you since were, Miranda pulled a Miranda.
Completely uninvited.
Well, she's a thought. And thoughts do what thoughts do. So...
She wouldn't even argue with you.
I know. Like I say it on her podcast. She does the podcast. I make such a rude ass comment. She thinks it's hilarious. I'm like, oh, good thought. Get patrol. I ask because she always asks. She's like, I want to get a sugar daddy. I'm like, you looking for a pay pig? And she likes it because she knows what I'm talking about. I'm like, yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about.
She does. All right. Thanks for listening to this episode of Weird Libertarians. The next episode, we promise, will be much more esteemed, thoughtful,
less. I don't know.
It won't be as funny.
It won't be.
No. You learned a lot, I think. There's a lot on this episode. Did you learn a lot?
I mean, I think I taught more than I learned, to be honest with you. Like, you guys probably never knew that Hank Hill was a cuck.
I didn't. I never even thought about Hank
that
Hill.
That Hitler had his nap violated first, so technically, whatever happened.
Well, he
got gassed by the Allies in World War One. His nap was violated first. He was a mail carrier. I mean, we could go into this for another half hour, so I'll let you wind up.
And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.